Box is back in business. It's the State of Combat with Brian Campbell, and it's back on CBS Sports. And you know it's back with a bang. Stacked, jacked, underwritten, and sponsored by that performance-enhancing audio. The one fight podcast you need in your life is right here, right now, brother. Coming at you, the Brian Campbell, without question, the voice that you hear. And I know what you're saying. Where you been? Where you been all my life with the boxing? I got too much wrestling on my timeline. Well, Big Red, we are back, folks. Back with a big show, too. There may not be a lot going on this weekend in terms of box to find out whether we care about. But, you know, we make the headlines ourselves. Amir Khan, Terrence Crawford stopping by this week to talk about their April 20th pay-per-view date. ESPN, Madison Square Garden. Top of the pops. It's big time. It's fun. It's going to be great.
I think that's magic.
Yes, Dwyer. That guy's going to be back on the show today. And a reminder, if you've missed this show, if you love this show, if you even like this show, hey, do us that solid. Spin it forward. 5 stars. Apple Podcasts. I don't know. Spotify, SoundCloud, MySpace, wherever you listen to this show. Tell some friends. Go on there. 5-star review. Move the product forward. Let's do it right here, right now. My co-host, he's the internationally renowned author, Filipino TV icon, a New York Times bestseller, my best friend in box, the one man who I love to cruise together with.
Cruising was made for box, sushi not made for box. Oh no, 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 no.
Rafe Bartholomew, live and direct from the West Coast. How is it, brother?
I'm doing great, man. You know, I'm eating sushi off my leg. I'm eating sushi off my butt. You know, it's been a great week in boxing. What can I say? I tried to get a little piece of sushi off of David Price's chest the other day.
God.
It didn't work out.
Have you eaten any of this, Rafe?
Salad.
Salad's very good. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
Well, the first thing I do is make him toast my salad.
Have you had any salads with Kubrat Pulev and or kissed him by any chance, Rafe?
Not yet. I wish that I had been in Costa Mesa that night. You know, I might have gotten lucky. Brian.
That's reckless to try to kiss somebody when you have an open cut on your eye. That's reckless, Rafe.
Some people could be into it. You never know. If actually I knew a guy. It's not me, but I had a friend, Brian, who talked about this time that he got into biking in the woods with this girl, like this girl he liked, and she fell off the bike and scraped her cheek a little bit, and it was like, he was a weird French dude, and he was like, she was so hot. And we were all like, yo, you are sick, man. What is wrong with you? But you know, so there could be some guys out there. What I wanted to say, I've seen a lot of guys. That's what I always want to say that. But Brian.
Well, the thing when you're looking at a guy though.
I've looked at a lot of guys.
You should think there's something that you should do.
Let's look at the entire man.
Yes. Keep going.
Oh man. I think what we suggested 2 weeks ago on our last show, the name Borat Pulev might have been even more apt than we thought it was at the time.
Wow.
Like, it's not just the, I like, he's out here doing all the inappropriate stuff.
Yeah, what a wild week. And then new evidence coming out. I almost don't even want to get into that. Kubrat Pulev kissing a female reporter, her suing him, then lap dance videos coming out after the fact. It's just what a, Reno and Rafe, when it comes down to boxing, Dwyer was not wrong.
Right. If you look at boxing hard enough, you're going to find people with colorful pasts. Not just wearing boxing gloves.
Rafe. You can, you know, the media members, people that work the corners, the nutritionists. It's a wild bowl of soup there, Rafe.
Yeah, I will say that this media member is probably not the first somewhat unprofessional media member we have ever encountered in the sport of boxing. I think it's more unusual to encounter a professional appearing and behaving media member. Shout out to all my bros who are drunk half the time on Press Row.
Yes, we have seen that. That is, wow, you know.
Folks, that's not the way men do.
Well, they do. They do, Dwyer. If you actually showed up at some fights and got away from the, you know, the Hooters in Campbell, California, you would notice it. One day, Rafe, one day you and I will be in Cali. We won't be expecting it, right? I'll be out there. You'll be there. We'll say, hey, you want to go to StubHub? You want to go to the House of Hardcore with me? And we'll be like, yeah, let's go see that fight. We go there. We see the regular LA favorites, right? Top cooperators there. Our guy, Francisco Salazar from Oxnard. Great dude. He'll be there. Lance Pugmire. And then we look left. And guess who's there?
Hi, it's Dwyer, the week of the fight.
Oh, my God. DwyerBoxing.com. Then we don't know if he's there for DwyerBoxing.com or...
He belongs on my crime channel here on YouTube.
I mean, this guy, Dwyer, he's multifaceted, Rafe. He's back. We're back. We're banging. I'm fired up. I know not everybody listens to every offering from the State of Combat, Rafe. That's why we had to take a week off last week. A lot of wrestling with WrestleMania. Look, big traffic driver. It's a big thing we do here at the State of Combat. So this week, you're not going to get your MMA fix, folks. Brandon Wise, my MMA co-host. I don't know if you've been following this, Rafe, challenging me to a boxing sparring match the next time I'm in the Fort Lauderdale office. This is getting pretty serious here. This is, this dude's a tall drink of water, 6'5", probably 30 years old, probably about 250. Wants to spar me for 3 rounds with the 16-ounce gloves. Dude, what? I know I'm washed.
What are you getting yourself into here,
I don't
Brian?
Know.
You're,
we had an argument.
You're finding a real man?
We had an argument on the show, and, you know, I mean...
If you're the bigger man, aren't you thinking, oh, I hope he does that against me?
Well, that's what he's thinking. He's the bigger man in this. But, Rafe, I couldn't back down. This is my show. We got into an argument at the end. I was like, you want to spar? We're sparring, bro. I don't know if my ass can cash the check that I wrote for my ass to cash. In a way, but it's your...
I think what you mean, you could get a good look at T-bone steak by sticking your head up a doctor's ass. Wait, no.
No. You have to look at the entire man, Rafe, because you know the one thing about Danny?
Danny has a stick.
And he's not afraid to use it. Ah, stop, Canelo. Danny Jacobs, you're the boy. Rafe, do I have any chance against prime Brandon Wise in a sparring match? 3 rounds. Knowing I'm a man, come after me, I'm 40.
Well, here's how I see this fight. Here's what it looks like, so to speak, Brian. It looks like 2 minutes in, you throw up on this man, and he quits. Make him quit by throwing up on him.
Wow. All right. Thank you. By the way, I've already done a video YouTube prediction of this fight, and I'd like to tell you where you can find it.
In my favorites folder right now.
Yep. It is available right there. Rafe, WrestleMania 35, New York, New Jersey. This weekend, I'll be there. I'll be there the whole damn week. When was the last WrestleMania you watched, Rafe? I think people would be interested in this.
The Ultimate Warrior was involved.
Wow. Like prime Ultimate Warrior, like WrestleMania 6, 1990, Toronto, Skydome.
It might have been the one where he gets to beat Hogan.
Yeah, damn, that's 1990. Rafe, that's a long time ago. How many years ago is that? 27?
Yes, it is.
29?
29, even more.
Wow, Rafe, you have sniffed out a WrestleMania since then. Not even when the great Floyd Mayweather at WrestleMania 24 in Orlando showed up against the Big Show, no?
No chance. Those things cost money, Brian. I never saw a WrestleMania live, I don't think. I used to just get the VHS like a month later.
All right. It's not for everybody, Rafe. It's apparently not for you. Well, enough fooling around, enough jacking back, Rafe. You know what I'm saying? As they like to say on Twitter.
They're just jacking it from everywhere.
We should get into box because we've been off for a few weeks and a lot has happened both this past weekend, the weekend before. We got a lot of names to talk about here, Rafe.
Alexander Grovesdick.
You want to start right there? Did you watch the Grovesdick in Philly at the ECW Arena, the House of Hardcore itself, 2300, Philly, ESPN, KO5, due to injury over Doo-Doo and Goombu, bro?
Doo-Doo's leg just went out, just doo-dooed him, man, the doo-doo man. That was a boring fight, Brian. There was nothing happening. We saw Alexander Grovesdick look better than Doo-Doo. You know, I'll say, and I'm not whatever. Like, I'm not saying, this is not meant for as real criticism of Vuzdik, but I was hoping that he would come out and really put a stamp on this, try and make a statement. Remember a few years ago when I started getting excited about Vuzdik was after his performances against Najib Mohammadi.
Yes.
And Unieski Gonzalez, and he was destroying those guys.
Well, he's got a way better back foot game than those guys, to be honest.
His punches were sharp. His back foot game was on point. He had a stick, and he was making them pay, and he was getting them out of there fast. They looked like they didn't belong anywhere near the same ring with him. And to tell you the truth, those guys, at least record-wise, don't really have a lot of separation between themselves and Dudu Nugumbu. So I was kind of hoping that Vuzdik would come out there and have a little bit of a statement and get this guy out of there fast and build some buzz behind him. Instead, and this isn't Vozdik's fault. We got a weird half stoppage weird fluke stoppage because of Dudu's calf. And that's it. We move on to the next fight.
Wow.
Against who?
They were combing the desert for Vuzdik opponents, and they were like, we ain't found Ish. No, we did. We found a pile of doo-doo. Here you go. Wow, what a crap matchup on paper, Rafe. And
may I ask, Brian, did you say the phrase combing the desert because you had the film Spaceballs in your head? Because Tyson Fury has jacked his way into fighting the Schwartz.
Oh, God. May the Schwartz be with you. What a friggin' joke. We can jump right ahead to latest news and just anyone that hasn't heard. Yes, Tyson Fury will make his June 15th ESPN Plus debut, probably from Las Vegas. And his opponent, unbeaten yet unheralded and unheard of, Tom Schwartz of Germany. Wow, this is a guy who was mandated to rematch Deontay Wilder, Rafe. A guy who has claimed many times, on this show, he'll never jack. He won't back up. He'll be there till he can't breathe. Rafe, he jacked for money, and now he's making us jack back to this crap. Here's a quote from Eddie Hearn. I don't blame Tyson Fury for facing Schwartz. Top Rank are the ones who should be saying, what are we doing here? Again, fair play to Tyson. But when you've been mandated to fight Deontay, the rematch of supposedly the fight of the year, and you turn it down and walk away and fight Tom Schwartz, it don't look great. Your thoughts?
It sure looks... I think it's just funny that now Anthony Joshua has the best opponent of these three heavyweights, and...
When we kind of groaned, at the damn baby at first, right?
Right. Yeah, everyone was like, oh my God, this is terrible. At least Wilder and Fury are going to fight again, and you're fighting Jarrell Miller. And now, well, Jarrell Miller at least looks like I guess I don't want to sell Dominic Brazil short, but since we've seen him lose before, it's harder to, I just rank Jarrell Miller higher. And all of the momentum that Deontay Wilder and Tyson Fury kind of stole from Anthony Joshua, they gave right back to him. They gave it right back to him. And now everyone has their own side, and it's good for each individual's business, and you can't really take that away from them. But it's going to be an ugly scene as we lead to one of those fights.
I will just say I've seen the three opponents of the three great unbeaten heavyweights right now. Fury gets Tom Schwartz. Wilder gets Boobs Brazil. And Joshua gets Big Baby. And all three... it's in play.
You should get beat by a man with titties. Come on, man.
You got him.
He ain't got that titties. He can't beat you, man.
You got him.
Let the beat you.
Please, don't let a man with a B cup beat you. All right, Rafe?
It's Tyson Fury. We've seen him in a suit looking extremely sharp. Are we going to see the thinnest, lightest Tyson Fury ever? I don't even know what that's going to look like.
Yeah, I don't know. I hope so. I hope so. I hope that he's going to take this really seriously. It's not Surfing Savari taking down that pinata. I mean, but what an awful step back, Rafe. I get what Top Rank's doing. You're trying to like reestablish, reset it, say, okay, we've got
to make stars out of all of unconsented kissers in the heavyweight division.
But Rafe,
Tyson Fury, when do you see a boxer kiss a man on the face right before he fights him?
I do stuff that people don't do.
Yeah, like fight Tom Schwartz. So here's the thing. It's like you could have picked so many other crappy heavyweights and we'd been like, all right, who's that real crappy 6'7" dude who took roids against Vlad? Marty Uce Walk? Waka Waka, put it right here. I'll take that. What about that fisherman that Deontay sent to Hill? What's that guy's name?
Duhapas.
Yeah, Johan Duhapas. Give me that. Give me Artur Spielka, Rafe, right? Rafe, would you be more excited about Tommy Adamek or Tom Schwartz?
Well, since we just saw Adamek get sent to hell by Jarrell Miller, who had like the Wesley Snipes Sugar Hill one tear going down his face while he sent Thomas Adamek to hell because it was his hero back in the day. I gotta go with Schwartz because I can at least pretend that since I've never seen or heard of this guy that he's gonna come in with something. It's an ugly scene. By the way, you said the three great unbeaten heavyweights. There's a fourth unbeaten heavyweight, and he might be a historic heavyweight. Like, and he carries two kebabs with him, brother.
Wow.
And he fights pretty damn soon.
He's a southpaw. He's like a, he's David Price. No, not that David Price. Sorry. I'm crossing swords here. All right. Anyway, let me end that analogy right there. Yeah. Usyk, I think it's May 18th in Chicago and it was supposed to be Povetkin. That's now gone. But hey, Carlos Takam, not bad, Rafe. Not bad at all. Although Takam did get stopped by, Dillian White, was it?
By Chisora.
By Chisora, coming off the good performance against Joshua. Yes, yes. But still, very credible welcome to heavyweight moment. That shows you the difference in mentality, earning power, a lot of stuff. We did ask Bob Arum, though, about signing that contract of Tyson Fury, Tom Schwartz.
We don't believe in contracts.
Hey, Bob. Did you see that little hullabaloo on Twitter of people trying to challenge that Bob Arum doesn't tweet for himself? And then Corner Man stepped in and said, yeah, he does. Then Dan Raphael stepped in and said, yeah, he does. And then Dan Canobio, our guy from CompuBox from Inside Boxing Live, got on the conference call and was like, Bob, do you tweet for yourself? Apparently 4 times a week, Bob tweets for himself. You buy that crap?
Because I got high.
But seriously, do you buy it?
Sure, why not? If he says he does, why is it? Who first of all, who the hell cares? Why wouldn't he? Bob keeps up with things. We talk to him fairly regularly. You see how sharp he is. There's no reason to believe why he wouldn't tweet. Other than anyone in this world who can get away from Twitter, please do it. Please leave it alone. As by the way, RIP, not RIP, but sorry.
We'll get there. We'll get there.
It's over. It's over.
Leave me the hell alone tonight. Please leave her alone.
All right. Hey, on that, so Gross Dick moves on. Nobody cares. He didn't fight anybody. On that undercard, remember this guy that was supposed to fight Terrence Crawford? Tell me a guy Mean Machine beat better than Chris Algieri. Aviskis Kavaskowicz, fought to a majority draw against Ray Robinson. Not that Ray Robinson, the other Ray Robinson, apparently one that he didn't deserve. So does this end the idea of Bob saying, we don't need the PBC welterweights? We got champions on the rise for Bud to face, like Rasputin in Kavakuskis. Rafe, did you watch this slop? Because I sure didn't. Save me.
Oh, Rasputin is a good one. Oh, he's gotten 10 lives. I watched a little bit of it, and yeah, we've seen Mean Machine Kavialuskis or Kavaluiskis or Kavajaskis, Sarunas Marshallonis. Now he would be a good fighter. We've seen him a bunch of times. He never looks special. He never, ever looks special. Now, he still is unbeaten, and I wouldn't be surprised if we eventually get forced to watch him take that L to Terrence Crawford. It will be a groaner, just in terms of matchmaking. He's not bad. He's just not special. And yes, it's crazier than ever. Every time these other welterweights fight on Top Rank, the claims that, you know, whenever Bob Arum says that my Lithuanian and my Russian Besputin, they would beat any of those two PBC guys.
Yeah.
Stop that crap. Stop
it. No. They won't. All right. I don't care about that. Let's roll on here, Rafe. In London this past week, in DAZN, you mentioned it, grown men willing to give each other Zerberts on their nipples, maybe a hickey on your belly button. Cash Ali, a guy who, a service I did not have, fought the late great, well no, he's still alive, 6'13" heavyweight David Price, who gets sent to hell a lot. Apparently they had a fiery, like, press conference weigh-in and people were looking forward to this. And then it ended up in a tumble. Cash Ali with a takedown, and then he bit David Price's belly?
It was sort of like the rib. It was like, you know, not quite the, not quite the belly, but it was underneath the man boob. It was underneath. He was getting beat by a man who didn't really, David Price didn't really come in with the titties this time. He looked in great shape. But yeah, you could see, it was a nasty bite mark. You could see the teeth. You could see the impressions. Maybe he thought that that's how you get a grill from Johnny Dang, but I got news for you, Cash Ali. You are incorrect.
Just like Muhammad Ali, they called him Cash. And
Ali.
Watch him bash this rave. Here's his quote afterwards. He was suspended, by the way, and he told IFL TV, there's no excuses for it. I think just the build up to the fight. It's my first time boxing on a big stage. I was so pumped up. I just wanted to fight. The street mentality just kicked in. It was stupid. As mad as it sounds, when I ended up on top of him, boxing went out the window. I just thought, this is a fight now. It was stupid. It was out of order, and I apologize to him. Rafe, when if you do something bat-ish crazy, don't apologize afterwards, right? Play it up. Market it. Be Crazy Tyson afterwards. Look at this eye. My kids have to see this.
How am I going to talk to my children after this? Hey, look what they did to me. I had to do it.
I don't normally do interviews with Kubrat Pulev unless I fornicate with him first. Yeah, exactly, Rafe.
Neither does Kubrat Pulev.
Speaking of fornication, Ryan Garcia, Rye Guy, King Rye was back this week, Rafe, on a DAZN card in your backyard of, where was that? Was that Indio?
Indio, of course.
Now, the Indio is not, like, really in your backyard, right? That's like Tim Bradley Coachella territory, correct?
That is correct. It's about 2 hours from where I stay in Los Angeles, but it is a service that I have. I go there on, I've been there a few times for fights. I was there for, unfortunately, the first loss of the Rooster.
Yes. Is that Fantasy Springs? Fantasy Springs Casino?
Yes, Fantasy Springs Casino.
All right. Well, Rye Guy took someone named Jose Lopez and sent him straight to hell in 2 rounds. And then, and by the way, DAZN and Golden Boy really tried to team up to put Ryan Garcia over. To remind you, he does have Canelo's trainers now, Eddie and Chepo Reynoso. And we had Canelo backstage giving him advice, working out with him. We had Canelo in the ring during the post-fight interview, giving him that rub like Floyd likes to do with like a Spence or a Gervonta. And afterwards, I don't have the sound available, but did you hear Rye Guy basically like, F to Mayweather's? Like, I ain't afraid of these guys. I'm not afraid of you, Floyd. I'm not, like, just talking some major ish. Your thoughts?
Look, I like Floyd said, if Ryan Garcia could beat my guy Rolly, then maybe I'll give him a shot at Gervonta.
All right. I heard it.
It was stupid. It was dumb. Don't call them. I mean, even Canelo, there's a point you can't quite see. I don't want to go too far in assuming here because Canelo is not a very emotive person in general, right? He always gives you kind of the stone face. He has a little bit of that to him, but there was a moment while Ryan Garcia is like, nobody intimidates me. I'll mess you up, dude. Yeah. Let's fight on Instagram. And Canelo's, you could tell, I don't know. I got this feeling that Canelo sort of turns to him and is just looking at him like, do I really have to pump up this guy? Cause Canelo, he was a hyped, good looking, young fighter that a lot of people doubted, kind of in a similar position as Ryan Garcia. But deep down, and he's proven it now, and he always fought like it. Canelo knew he was the real thing. He had this elite talent, and he was going to challenge himself and keep proving it and get there. And I don't know if I would be curious. I don't know if he'll ever tell us I don't think he would ever tell us honestly. I'm curious if Canelo actually sees that in Ryan Garcia, or if he sees a kid with some flashy hands, some flashy flash, and a nice following, a cute face. I got his t-shirt, but he ain't, I don't know. He's faking the funk on a nasty dunk.
Flashy flash. The men want to be actually the wannabe.
Well, what we know about Ryan Garcia right now is, yes, you are the father. So congratulations. Did you see those? It does prove that, you know.
And then I take advantage. And then when I shoot my shot, I shoot, you know, for the KO.
Yeah. And he got it. He got one past the goalie there. Congratulations. And, look, he's back. That's a win. People are waiting for him to get sent to hell. I'm cheering for the guy. All right. 1 million Instagram followers can't be wrong, Rafe. I'm still cheering for the guy.
I think he's up to well over two, my man.
Right, well, you know, at this point, who's asking? Who's counting?
You know what he got to do to really up his influencer game?
Sleep with Floyd's daughter?
Ugh, I was not going to suggest that. I was going to say maybe take both of the Cianci Garcia twins.
Oh, how dare you.
On a date.
How dare you.
Just to say, like Kobe and Brandy going to the prom together.
That would be fiery. That would be spicy. That would be like in your face, Latin Goonies.
Angel can chaperone.
Wow. That would sort of change how we look at the sport.
Boxers looked at like is like a hood sport.
Yeah, I mean, that would definitely change that. All right, Rafe, on that undercard, before we get to the fine rooster, everyone's talking about this Miguel Cotto-promoted junior welterweight prospect who got a win that night, Danielito Zorrilla. I'm not woke on this guy. I was hoping that you were, because you're a big-time boxing fan.
Well, I hate to let you and our listeners down, Brian, but I am not woke on that. Look, when has there ever been a good Miguel Cotto promotion like prospect that actually lived up to it? We haven't had one yet. Alberto Machado is the closest we've got. And well, Andrew Cancio kind of ended that train.
Yeah.
So I don't know. That doesn't mean that this fighter can't be good, but the deep undercard of a DAZN event where the main event is a deep undercard of any normal boxing event. I did not watch.
Did you catch Andrew Cancio on Teddy's Atlas's podcast?
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah, man, I like that. I'm liking Teddy's podcast right now. Like, it's not perfect. It's a lot of Teddy, but I'm liking it.
I love you. I make you a man.
Okay. I'm into it. On that undercard, as we mentioned, you know when they come. Oh, wow. You know when they come to Fantasy Springs, they come to watch the rooster. You know he is gonna lose, and he did again, Rafe. He fought 10-6 Jeremy Ramos and lost a disputed split decision, Rafe. Two in a row for the damn rooster, the guy we love, the guy who squares up like it's a game of Frogger and walks right into oncoming traffic like a prime Ruslan Provodnikov. And we got a little quote from him before the fight, Rafe.
They know me as a rooster because I come straight in, but we're going to come in more smart.
He didn't, well, certainly did that, but possibly, we'll have to check the DMs. But yeah, he came in straight on, Rafe, and if you have the backbone, you can beat this guy.
Yeah, well, look, as much as I have tried to push the folk hero image of the rooster, I think we were always very open about the fact that what he was doing in there did not really appear to be an effective boxing strategy or anything, and that he throws those little baby punches that aren't really doing anything half the time and doesn't give himself any leverage or distance to land a decent punch. It was so fun while it lasted. I guess, look, these are split decision losses. If they match him against really low level guys and like a Butterbean attraction, I guess it could work. But geez, man, bummer.
Did you listen to that weird post fight interview that some like low level site did with him? And he was all giddy and happy. And he's like, no, this is good. This is good. I'm fighting better competition. I'm not fighting bums anymore. This is going to make me better. And he's like, to be the man, you have to fight great men.
Look, that is one of the great things about the Nico's character, right? Cause he has that insane lunatic smile at all times about all things that his emotional register does not seem to make any sense, right? I mean,
but you know how he was raised,
that's
right?
That's why I fell in love with him that first night with Todd Grisham on the call, the case of Mountain Dew in the back, good old Roxy on the sidelines, and Nico comes to begin the fight, crazy ass, Joker ass smile on his face, touches gloves, and he's like, good luck, buddy! You know, I mean, yeah. I like that side of him, but
I blame his brother.
He's got to win some fights sometime.
I blame the way he was raised.
Him and his brother used to bang it out all the time. Now you.
All right, Rafe. Wow, we're already there. We're already there. You know, sorry.
It's a bad weekend for rat tails, brother.
Yeah, wow. Speaking of rat tails, in Spain over the weekend, your guy, not my guy, Kermin Laharaga, was sent to hell.
Bella's guy, Kermin Laharaga.
Dropped his European welterweight title and was stopped late by David Avanesian, a decent fighter, right? Once beat Shane Mosley for that, like, bootleg WBA junior title that eventually Lamont Peterson took home, that eventually went to Errol Spence. And, yeah, so Laharaga's gonna institute his, rematch clause, apparently. You care about this at all?
I like that. I like that. You know, he feels like whatever. He should get right. He can get right back in there and win it back. If he does that make him a real contender right away? No, I don't think so. It's like, once you have a loss to David Avanesian, I think people aren't going to consider you like, I saw some tweets last week suggesting that Terrence Crawford doesn't want no Kermin Laharaga. And I was like, look, I like this crazy rat tail guy with a knife tattooed on his stomach, but that is a wild ass statement. And I had to do some soul searching. Because I can't get all excited now. I can't let this happen to me again. You know, right? Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. I've been fooled twice in one weekend by three rat tails. And Brian, I think what it means is me and anyone else out there who feels like this, we have to stop trying to find the next Marcos Maidana. We may never find that man again. He used to have a rat tail. You can look up the pictures. And
so wait, are you suggesting that to stop trying to find the next Marcos and try to find more rat tail junior middleweights that fight like him, we should serve up the guy we thought might have been the next great rat tail champion, Enrico Macias, and serve him to a comebacking Marcos Maidana as a see if you still got it sort of.
That would be fun. That would be interesting. It would also probably put, that would be an interesting test. I'd be down for that. No, I just mean that we love Maidana, and for a minute and to a lesser degree, of course, you know, Lucas Matisse, they're these two bad tattoos everywhere.
Jail tats.
Badasses. Pretty good. Could really crack. And obviously, Nico Macias could not really crack, but Kermin Laharaga can. And this idea that they were these fairly tough. I mean, Matisse got exposed a little bit. His toughness is now, not quite so, established, but.
We have a new Bobby Pacquiao, and his name. Yeah. Let me say first something. Yeah.
But just trying to find this new folk hero, awesome looking badass, great power. You just get excited to see them fight. Always fun. We're always on the lookout for him, whether it's in good old Lewis Ritson or Laharaga or Nico Macias, any of these guys. And I just don't know. It's asking too much of these people.
And that's what made Jason
Litzau
special.
There is only one El Chino.
That's what made Jason Litzau so special and why I love the American boy from Minnesota, because he was a dirt hole like these rat tail guys, but he was like a classy, cleaned up version, not on the inside, but on the outside. He was like this teen heartthrob. And hey, when he beat Celestino Caballero, I was dancing on my couch, Rafe. I'll never forget it. All right. Then others, yes, sent him to hell. Adrian Broner left him in hell, but that's the way it goes in boxing. Wow. All right. Rafe, that'll wrap up that part. Oh, also in recent weeks. Hey, we got to talk about this. This may have been your 2019 front runner for fight of the year. Tell me if I'm crazy. Sergey Lipinets, a guy who I predicted would stop Lamont Peterson, and surprise you, did just that in a possible fight of the year here. There was about 10 insane back and forth phone booth rounds, and he stopped 35-year-old Lamont Peterson to the point that Lamont Peterson has now stopped fighting professionally, Rafe. Wow. I think Lipinets showed you that, yeah, he lost to Mikey for the belt at 140, but he really pushed Mikey. He made Mikey bleed, and now he's a player at welterweight, Rafe. This is a big leap type of win. Were you not entertained?
Yeah, Lipinets, I think actually if you talk to Errol Spence, he will mention the Lipinets fight and that moment where he made Mikey bleed. And he said at that moment, Errol said to himself, if it bleeds, we can kill it.
Wow. This guy Lipinets with Joe Goosen in his corner for the first time, Rafe, He fought like a Joe Goosen fighter. I love this marriage. Love Rafe, because Lipinets don't care. He's a destroyer. He's the samurai. I've talked to him. I did that PBC face to face with him. There's no panache to his personal life outside of his love for chess and his family. He wants to brawl and fight and just make it ugly.
Brian, let me pour some water on your balls here. This was a great fight. This was, I agree, the front runner for fight of the year, which I think a lot of us might say has a little bit to do with 2019 having very few good matchups so far. However, this was a well matched fight, played out wonderfully in the ring, back and forth. Lamont Peterson up on the cards when he got stopped. Brave effort, like he always gives Peterson. But are we actually going to be like going into having a tough fight that you win with Lamont Peterson in the last fight of Lamont Peterson's career at a weight that he was never a true contender at?
Oh, how dare you?
Sergey Lipinets a contender at this?
Yes,
good
yes,
fighter,
it does.
47.
Yes, it does.
He'll be Lipinets. The good thing about him, you could throw him in against any of these top 147 pounders, and he'll give a good effort. He will last half the fight probably, and he'll take a good beating and keep coming. But he ain't beating any of those guys. He ain't pushing any of those guys.
I'd like to see him against Danny Garcia. He'll push that guy. He might get stopped, but he'll push that guy. Look, he's a crafty brawler.
He'll pressure them, but they're just so, there's a class of roughness.
He's a crafty brawler. There's class in what he does. He's an aggressive brawler, but there's like real class and angles and some technique to what he does.
Yes, I agree. There is some. But it isn't enough. These are just better. That performance, if you're fighting that closely with Lamont Peterson, I mean, you saw Lamont Peterson fight Errol Spence last year.
Yeah, now, I had Errol Spence by murder.
The cream of the PBC welterweights. But there, I just think there is
right,
a true gap in level.
What's his ceiling at welterweight? Looking good and losing to Danny Garcia? Because I think he could push even a Sean Porter. I think he can push him. I think he's a sneaky opponent for a Sean Porter, and he might be able to win it. What's his ceiling, Sergey Lipinets? Come original right now, Rafe. Step up. Bring it.
Yes, I think his ceiling is losing to all of the champions at 147.
I don't know. He showed me something. He showed me he can get to that next level. And Joe Goosen trains you so that you better effing get inside on him. I mean, he will get the most out of you. He willed John Molina to stop Mickey Bay.
Let's actually, when's the last huge moment for, are we really, Joe Goosen, I love him.
Oh, don't do it.
As a person
no,
to talk to, I love
no,
him.
No, don't.
Since Chico Corrales, really, what are we pointing to?
Molina stopping Mickey Bay.
Great. Oh, wow. That was a wonderful
he wore
moment
an
on
awesome,
Friday Night Fights.
He wore an awesome
showbox?
White.
Was that Showbox? Come on,
yes,
man.
He wore an awesome white jumpsuit in the corner of Travis Jr. when he got stopped by Fanfara. By the way, remember that time that I was out for steak dinner at the Palms in Vegas and Mickey Bay was at the table next to me and I was like taking secret pictures with my phone and I was fired up, dude, Mickey Bay's at the table next to us and you no-sold me over DM like hardcore, like I don't care. You think I care about that guy eating that dinner at that table next to you?
No.
I don't. How dare you, Rafe? I mean, Mickey Bay, dude, Mickey Bay.
Why is it that Mickey Bay is the one boxer who you saw in Las Vegas and were not emboldened enough to, did you not have enough of the Vegas juice in you at the moment to go hug him and say, champion,
huevos? No, no. Anyway, look, when we're off the clock, Rafe, we're fans, right? That's why we take casino pictures with Rocky Juarez, right? That's why when we see our campeón, we get excited, you know? I got excited for Mickey Bay, and you didn't care. Anyway, I get what you're saying. Is Joe Goosen more of a legend because of what he did with the Ruelases in the 80s and the fact that he dresses so great and the fact that he willed Corrales to the greatest fight in our modern lifetime? Maybe, but he's kind of like a Freddie Roach where if you hire him, you better be ready to be offensive. And that's what he adds to you. He's adding to Lipinets. And I got to give you another tip, Rafe. Just for a second. just to see how it feels, and you can analyze this all you want.
I have a group of analysts who receive the tip. They review the tip. They analyze the tip information and determine what type of tip it is.
Just for a second, Rafe, I want you to see how this feels. Never count out a fighter from Kazakhstan, whether it's Gennady Golovkin, whether it's Sergey Lipinets, whether it's Christina Hammer on April 13th against Clarissa
How about
Shields.
Oleg Maskayev?
Never count out a Kazakh, Rafe. How dare you?
You know who will count out a Kazakh? My man James Toney. He will count out a Jurov. Oh my God! Oh, look at this!
Oh my God! Oh, rest in peace, the great. He was a great, you know, he called a great fight. I'm still a George Foreman guy. If I'm picking one fighter analyst, let's say like for a dream fight, you can pick your crew. Probably most people are picking Lampley. That's fine. People may pick Merchant for that number two chair, but I'm picking George Foreman for that third one. He was great, Rafe.
I think I would go Campbell, Farhood, and Malignaggi.
Wow. Who's play by play in that? Who's P by P in that? Farhood?
I don't know who's, you tell me. I don't even know the difference.
I forgot. You hate boxing and you hate boxing broadcasters. I forgot about that salty side of you. All right, Rafe, let's roll on in the show. Right? I don't have time for this, but what a great fight. Lipinets Peterson. If you haven't watched it, check it out on the Fox Sports Go app or in my favorites folders. Thank you. Thank you, Dwyer. Thank you. Hey, we got a lot of Dwyer on the show. I thought we took a couple weeks off, right? We cleaned ourselves up. We got sober. We dried up a little bit and now we're okay with it, right? You okay with it?
I'm okay with it.
All right. I'm okay with a little more Dwyer. I can live like this. I'm ready. All right.
I want to know how Tron is living.
Hey, we mentioned Kubrat Pulev and this whole ridiculous situation. And by the way, we might have made some jokes. Obviously him, no matter the relationship or situation, him ending in a post-fight interview with a female and like kissing and advancing on camera or not, it's kind of a dirt hole move. The whole thing is
that is the literal definition of sexual assault.
Yes,
everyone listening, does not matter what the person is wearing, does not matter what ridiculous things they have done in the past or will do in a few hours. You cannot rock up to anyone, grab them on the face and kiss them on the lips or anywhere in their body.
Yes.
You cannot do that. And for, you know, you could, for all the other valence factors, the only thing the only legal thing here is what Kubrat Pulev did in that moment. You just can't do that.
Hey man, don't be a blank. You know, hey, you're really gonna act this way. You're really gonna be buffoonish.
I mean, what we found out is Pulev saying on Do What You Like, and if you missed it, Rafe, he's the one that said just grab him in the biscuits.
Grab him in the biscuits.
No, you can't do that. You can't do that, all right? It's 2019. Athletes sleep with a lot of women, but you can't do that on
camera.
But
they don't go around grabbing biscuits like
that. That is true. In the end, Pulev in that fight, though, on ESPN, got a push, came in with abs. I'll give him credit. He's being propped up as a potential Fury opponent, and he rallied after a really bad cut over his left eye in which I thought the ship be sinking there to stop Bogdan Dinyu. Kind of heroically. I mean, it was a fun little fight there. Dinyu, though, post-fight, filing a protest to the Connecticut State Athletic Commission for a rabbit punch. Rafe, does he have a case here?
When has anyone ever gotten in trouble for a rabbit punch? When does that ever lead to overturning a decision? When does a protest ever work out in boxing? All right, I can think of one. Who was it that got knocked out after the bell in a Friday night fights main event in Minnesota? I think it was Arhenis Mendez either got knocked out or knocked somebody out. It was Rancis Barthelemy.
Yes.
It was late. It was not intentional, but they did make that a no decision and they had to have the fight again. And that was the one where Teddy was going crazy trying to argue that the punch was legit, even though it was a solid 10 seconds or something after the bell. You're like, Teddy, I know that he started the combination before the bell, but assuming he heard the bell, there should be something in his training as a boxer that made him stop. Anyway.
He make him flip cheeseburgers.
I would say that Kubrat Pulev's biggest worry from the California Commission is not going to be Bogdan Dinyu's protest. It's going to be them looking into his yeah. activity That's out assault, after the fight, kissing the reporter.
Yeah.
And he's going to get suspended over that.
And obviously the story took crazy turns with some lap dance video being thrown out there. I'm not going to judge anyone on any side. The whole thing is pretty ridiculous, and I hope that, you know, it gets sorted out and we can move on from it. But it's bad. That's a bad move there, as we mentioned there. He looked good in the fight. He rallied back. He's got to be – he's a player. If he's going to fight Tyson Fury, I know there's a significant height difference, but he's a player. He's in that fight, Rafe.
No, he's good. He's always been solid. And I respected his performance against Vladimir Klitschko when he stepped up in 2015 and did that. He fought well. He pushed Vlad a little. He made Vlad – come out of that Vlad shell of just, you know, jab, grab, jab, right, grab, jab, jab, grab, G-jab, G-jab, G-grab. Then he pushed Klitschko out of that mold and made Klitschko knock him the hell out. One thing I think in various walks of life now, we can probably say that Kubrat Pulev does not give an F about a lot of things, many things,
yes.
All sorts of normal modes of behavior. He's that guy who's going to go out there and do what he feels like he needs to do in that moment, which can be very good in a fight. So yeah, I mean, I would be up for that fight. If he gets suspended, Brian, it could be pretty, it's kind of a monkey wrench in the top rank program though, because we know boxing commissions, they don't care about PED usage so much. If you get popped for that, they'll give you 6 months. But if you do something that embarrasses them in the press, you're out for a year.
Yeah, so California will drop the bomb.
Kubrat Pulev ain't no spring chicken, right? He's what, 37 already?
Yeah.
38? If he's out for a year, that screws things up a little bit.
Yeah, we're going to have to watch that closely because there's a very small pool of potentially fun heavyweight opponents for Tyson Fury. It's Kubrat Pulev and it's everybody else, Rafe. So that's going to be interesting. But look, good win there. Good comeback there. I'd have to watch the tape closer on a rabbit punch. I don't really remember one. Do you?
No, I don't remember. And that's, I don't get it.
All right. Let's talk about what happened on this broadcast. It was a little weird. You got a 4-man booth overlooking the arena. You got Joe Tess on your left, followed by Tim Bradley, Andre Ward, and Kriegel on the timeline. And then Tim Bradley did this.
It's a great time to grab big cash in the heavyweight division, Tim.
Yeah. You said it right there. Big cash in the division.
Whoa!
Look at this, baby.
Heavyweight
division. Everybody in the heavyweight division need to pay homage to Floyd Mayweather for making $100 million possible in the sport of boxing. Pay homage to Floyd Mayweather and all you B-level heavyweights.
It's real.
All you B-level heavyweights out there, baby. It's real cash, and you know it.
That's that Pacquiao money.
Like for the listen to me. Just like the little Dory the fish says, just keep winning. Just keep winning. That's all you guys have to do to line up with either the three guys, you know, in the heavyweight division, the top guys in the heavyweight division. That's all you got to keep doing. If you win,
let me explain something to you.
The sweepstakes and get a shot at the title and big money in the sport.
Let me explain something to you.
Thank you, Floyd Mayweather.
So Rafe, couple things here. One, I love me some Tim Bradley. So we know that established. Easily one of my three favorite fighters to have covered and watched in this era. This was really weird though. He's making it rain with a pile of hundos that look to be damn real. And it didn't really make a lot of sense. Like, it's a fun viral moment. He's throwing cash all around. But did you see the faces of Andre Ward, who did break character and make the joke a couple times, is that Pacquiao money that people liked? But outside of that, he had like a what the hell are you doing face, and Kriegel was like embarrassed by the whole situation. And at the end, Kriegel grabbed some and Bradley was like, I see you touching that. Take that home with you. You can have it. And then Kriegel was like, no, I don't want it. And then did you hear that little jab in there by Tessitore randomly goes, is that bail money? It was just a weird segment. And to top it off, it makes no sense because here's the deal. Heavyweights in America, even that great Fury Wilder fight, still only moved 350,000. There's no Floyd connection. Anthony Joshua's the money man in this division if you fight him in England. And it has nothing to do with Floyd Mayweather at all. Not even remotely connected. What the hell is he talking about?
It was not the best point. It does not follow. And then all of a sudden we're talking about Dory the fish. Is that from like Finding Nemo or something? I don't even know what that where that comes from. But yeah, it was not the most cogent argument. This is not something you want to stand before the Supreme Court and try to deliver without getting picked apart. But it was funny. I didn't mind it. I like, he was definitely going. I mean, you are the wrestling expert. There, it seemed like there was a little bit, he was trying to do some promo kind of tones in there when he was cutting the, like, and all you heavyweights out there better thank Floyd Mayweather. Also, yeah, the weirdest thing is he keep mentioning Floyd. That part doesn't make any
sense.
Right.
The point of his rant is if you're an average heavyweight, just keep winning and you'll potentially make more money than you ever would have because we have three marketable heavyweights right now. But it also kind of came off as like a weird Top Rank infomercial. Like, hey, we got Tyson Fury on this side of the street now. So anybody out there, like, come over. Because what the hell does Floyd Mayweather have to do with that? Nothing.
About as much as he has to do with Ryan Garcia's career.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, I guess you're right. All right, Rafe, we got to get into latest news, Do You Care, our interviews and all that. But before we do, let's hear from our friends and sponsors.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
All right, Rafe, we're back. We got to run through a lightning round of news that we missed over the past few weeks before we throw to our guests of the week. We mentioned it that Wilder, while we were gone, did choose Dominic Brazil, as we thought, May 18th, Barclays Center. The big shocker was A, that he turned down all that DAZN money, and B, that he wanted it, and it was his call to be on regular Showtime, thank you, for boxing fans everywhere, and not a pay-per-view fight. There were a lot of reactions coming out of this whole dog and pony show they did with the press conference. It was one of those rare breaking news moments that we didn't, no one broke. We didn't see it coming. You care? Are you excited?
Well, I believe it was broken incorrectly about four times before it then was announced. So yes. Shout out to everyone's sources.
Exactly. So it's better for boxing and for fans, of course, that this fight, a mandatory, is on regular Showtime. And by the way, it's not a bad fight by any means. It's going to be fun to watch. They hate each other. They both bang. They're both like 6'7" and more. It's going to be wild, but the whole idea of Wilder turning down the giant DAZN money, how is Heyman making this work, Rafe?
I don't know. We don't know. On some level, it's none of our business as long as all the people involved are getting paid what they're agreed to get paid.
You made that take 2 weeks ago, Rafe, that why do we care who's accepting what money and cash? Like, shut up. We just want the fights.
Well, yeah, exactly. I think we care because you can't totally divorce the business from the kind of fights we get, right? If we're not putting some pressure on for promoters and networks to generate the revenue necessary to make good fights happen, then we never get the good fights. But at the same time, the obsessing, the idea that the only thing that matters sometimes to some fans, it seems, is who's making more money or who's getting better ratings. Like, if it's a great fight and I'm the only person in the world who watched it, like a good Nico Macias fight, for example, I don't care. I got good boxing. I'm happy. And so I think that balance is important to remember as a fan. I also think that although it was surprising that Wilder turned down the guaranteed money from DAZN in this case, because he says he values that free agency kind of deal where he can go fight by fight and, assuming he keeps winning, increase his value and increase his leverage to make more money. obviously there's a big risk doing that in the heavyweight division. I mean, go back in time. There, you don't have to go back far. We can remember plenty of examples in our lifetimes of unbelievable heavyweight upset. Haseem Rahman over Lennox Lewis. Like, you can mess or F around and get your whole money messed up. And so Deontay Wilder's taking that chance with this because he's saying, okay, Showtime is going to give me the same money, or probably going to give him enough money to turn down this first fight with Dominic Brazil, which was reported to be worth $20 million for Wilder from the zone. So he's like, okay, I'll make the same money there somehow, and then I'll be free again. We can go right back into talking to Joshua, and maybe I'll be able to get a better deal out of that. Now, maybe he's right, maybe he's wrong. I don't think it, though, I'm not upset about it because I don't feel like it brings us any farther away from a Joshua or a Fury fight for Wilder. He can, that, as soon as this fight is over, assuming he beats, Dominic Brazil, then we're right back in it, calling for him to fight one of the other two top heavyweights. So I don't mind that. Here's what I think may have played a role in that. We've seen it's been a rough or a slow, not rough, but it's been a slow first half of 2019 for Showtime. PBC obviously is deals with Fox and Showtime. They're splitting up the fights. Some of the bigger name fights have ended up on Fox. And then the Showtime fights, you know, like Pacquiao and Broner, that could have been a big Showtime main event, was a pay-per-view, so that doesn't go to the network.
That could never be a Showtime main event financially, just so you know.
They haven't been able to have Showtime championship boxing big main events so far this year.
Yes.
And I think maybe because of all the loyalty that Showtime and PBC have shown Deontay Wilder and bringing him up over all these years and helping him reach this level of his career and his own, and the fact that he likes to, this idea of himself as a free agent, they were able to decide, all right, let's throw Showtime a bone here. Let's get the money up for Deontay to fight on regular Showtime so that Showtime isn't left out in the cold in this boxing bonanza times. And this really does make their calendar. Now, it also might make it that we don't see another good fight on Showtime for the rest of the year because expensive.
How much of the budget went to keeping Deontay on here? That's going to be an interesting question.
Also, I don't know. Well, we'll know. We'll see. We will see what fights get made on Showtime for the rest of the year and if they shot their whole load on this.
Oh God. I mean, do I have to? Do we have to, Rafe? Do we?
You know it.
I mean, you know.
You know, I'm tired of getting the taste of it. I want the whole load. Man,
yeah. Well, Paul Pierce, they may have given the whole load to Deontay right there. So Rafe, coming in 2 weeks ago, before we knew all the details, we were rightfully like, what the hell is going on here? How could Deontay turn down $100 million? You wanted generational wealth. You were guaranteed two fights against Joshua in this 3 or 4 fight deal, depending on who you're talking to here. I actually think coming off of this, the details that have come out do make sense from this point of view. I think I was wrongfully saying, what's Heyman going to do? The thing is, I know we look at Heyman as a promoter and a manager. Like, you know, the whole idea is he really violating the Muhammad Ali Act because he keeps these promoters at bay that he uses when he wants to. But at its core, he's a manager. Yes, he has financial ties to Showtime and Fox and has to produce good matchups. But if he let Wilder go, if Wilder wanted to, he's a manager in that case. And here's the deal. Keeping him as a free agent long term, if you're going to take that gamble, like you mentioned, is a smart financial play because he would be guaranteed $40 million to fight Joshua twice and in his, for each fight. And in his mind, he can make more if they do a 2-network pay-per-view eventually with that. And the key part of this is Joshua's not officially a DAZN fighter. He is each fight if they pay him the most, but Eddie was smart from the beginning of never making Ege an official have to fight on DAZN guy. So by staying a free agent, if you're Wilder, it's not about what did Heyman give him for this fight to keep him happy. It's about what could Heyman get Showtime to give Wilder for this fight to make him happy, like you said. And it's about if he stays with DAZN, and Deontay said he had fear. He didn't sound in the meetings. He thought that they were arrogant and he didn't sound like they could guarantee Joshua. They could guarantee the money, but they couldn't guarantee Joshua because Joshua is not technically a DAZN fighter. And that was part that gave him pause. So in his mind, why am I going to lock up for 3 or 5 fights with them, which would take me out of ever fighting Tyson Fury in an ESPN Fox co-promoted pay-per-view, right? It would take him out of
ever. He might want to take another L to Fury first. I feel you.
It would take him out of ever fighting AJ in some kind of, cause it, what Hearn has been saying, and look, there's a lot of lying going back and forth in the whole AJ versus, Wilder talk going back a couple years now. But what Hearn keeps saying is the biggest bidder is going to win in the end. And he's right. In the end, AJ's not a DAZN fighter. If Wilder Joshua is actually going to happen, it'll have to happen outside of DAZN. And it'll have to happen in some kind of like Showtime or Fox pay-per-view where they just throw the boat at these guys.
So that is the one place where some of this logic starts to fall apart, because if you're talking about each fighter walking away with upwards of $50 million and from pay-per-view money, what makes us think that these fights are going to generate that kind of pay-per-view interest? We haven't seen AJ on pay-per-view. We have seen Wilder on pay-per-view. It was a wonderful fight. It was the biggest event of last year. And they got, what, 325,000? Now, there's good reason to believe it could be more because of just the names involved of the fighters have all elevated themselves since. They're in the conversation. It could be worth more. But to listen to, it's the obligatory aficionados, Evan Rutkowski, former HBO marketing employee podcast shout out of the week. He was estimating that to make that kind of money, to get that money player, they're going to need to sell 1.5 million on both. We haven't seen that happen in a long time, Brian.
Right. And look, Wilder Fury, fantastic fight, almost the fight of the year. Best heavyweight fight we've seen in a long ass time, short of, by the way, AJ Klitschko, which was fantastic as well. It only did like 350. So you have to think that fight got more attention the night of than it did leaning in because it was so great. So if they had done a rematch right now, could it have done double? Oh yeah, it could have done double. So the idea is, can we get to 1.5 with 2 unbeatens building it up like they're both knockout artists, like they're finally facing each other in some form of Mayweather-Pacquiao? I hear what you're saying. It's a gamble. It's a long shot. And if you're Wilder, you're turning down that long shot for the kind of guaranteed generational wealth with DAZN that you said you wanted. But don't you want to be in a driver's seat when it's actually going to happen? If you can actually get 1.5, don't you want to have some kind of control and not just be bought for that fight?
That is true. He does. Yeah. And I think that he preserves that. And I kind of think my guess is that they both win and they use it for more leverage. They use the suggestion of pay-per-view as another alternative to basically squeeze more money out of DAZN. This fight may end up on DAZN regardless, but they get the money they're looking for. And if they get the money and we get the fight, then we should be happy. Everybody got to eat, baby.
I was actually impressed by the end. You're right about that.
Everybody's got to eat, baby.
I was actually impressed in the end by Wilder's decision, as wild as it sounds. Now, let's talk real quick. We don't have a lot of time in the show to go down this road, but since we were last on, DAZN made giant news when they doubled their price for monthly subscribers on a month-by-month basis. So outside, it used to be $9.99 no matter what. Now if you want to subscribe for just 1 month, like let's say you have to see Canelo Jacobs, you have to pay $19.99 now, double the price. But if you're a yearly subscriber, the price actually goes down from $9.99 a month to about $8.33, give or take a half cent, because they've lowered the price, but you have to book for 12 months. So when this news came out, Rafe, I got to say, it was brilliant. I thought it was brilliant. It was incorrectly reported by a lot of people that DAZN doubles the price. Well, yeah, they're doubling the price if you're a one-month guy. But the whole thing was, if they're quote-unquote killing pay-per-view, you're never going to be able to kill pay-per-view at just $99.99 a month. So in my eyes, if you got a lot of people that are just going to come in for one big fight, this is smart. Because I'm sorry, $19.99 is still a lot better for a Canelo fight than $74.95. And if you're going to go yearly, you're now getting it cheaper than you originally were. And the fact I thought DAZN did a key media move, they called up key media members, including myself, the day before and had their vice president on the line ready to answer your questions. And it kind of, look, if they had announced it without doing that, it probably would have been easier to be like, what the hell's going on? They framed it better. So that day, the next day, I'm on the pro DAZN ship. I thought that was a really smart move. I think to make more people sign up long term and to take advantage of those one stop shoppers who are coming in and out.
There was one, at least one key media member who didn't get the exclusive opportunity to speak with DAZN, have my balls fluffed by DAZN executives. It was me. So I think you're right. It was basically a smart move when you look at it in objective terms. However,
I was just going to say, but I got a but here, Rick. I want you to see my butt. I want you to hear it.
I want to smack it.
Wow.
Let's talk about a fight that blew up in my face.
That joke blew up in my face. Let me wipe the egg off my face. The butt is this, Rafe. They're now paying. By the way, they were just offering Deontay Wilder, as we established, like insane money. They're already paying Gennady Golovkin and Canelo Alvarez insane money. Every time Anthony Joshua appears on that screen, they will be paying him insane money. Yet people like Glazer, and I don't know, at this point in the time, can you take anything Glazer writes on Facebook as truth? But he's trying to claim that ESPN Plus has like 2.5 million subscribers and that DAZN only had something like 80,000. I don't know if that's true. But even if it's, you know, even if the percentages are a little bit off, at this point in time, can DAZN ever remotely make their money back? When is that Ukrainian oligarch going to go, you know what? I've put in a little bit too much right now. I know they got this new daily MLB show with highlights, but in in-game rights, but you're paying a lot of people a lot of money. Granted, you have to. No one's going to come to DAZN unless Canelo's fighting a quasi pay-per-view fight on there. By the way, Jacob's not a quasi. It's a real pay-per-view fight. Can they kill pay-per-view? Can this model work, Rafe? Because it feels like every fighter they're willing to throw $100 million at.
There's a lot we don't know about DAZN's overall business model. First, we don't know how deep the oligarch's pockets are. If he is one of these true former Soviet oligarchs who has access to real state money, basically, then those are deep pockets. They can go a long way. It's also hard to spend that money outside of certain countries. So maybe using a lot of it on U.S. boxers helps them in other ways. Another issue here.
Are you talking about laundering?
I don't know what that is. I've never even heard of that. Oh, Brian, wow. Let's not even go down that road. Let's just say, however, that DAZN is what we aren't factoring in here is that DAZN is a pretty successful model outside of the United States. Their rights are big outside of if you go to a lot of European countries, they will have pretty much every major soccer league except the domestic league in that country. So if you're watching it in Germany, you'll get, you know, Italian league and English Premier League and stuff like that. They just won't get the German league inside Germany. So they have rights to that. They have rights to all the American, I mean, they have rights to NBA and MLB and NFL in Europe and Japan. This model is working in other countries that don't have the sort of sports giants like we do, that don't have the ESPNs and the legacy things like Showtime and the artists formerly known as HBO Boxing. Here in the States is a much tougher road to hoe. And they have to be committed to losing money for a long time if they really want to be a player. You can't just come in and win and take over in a year. This is like a decade long plan if they are actually serious. And still it could fail, but this is going to take a long time and a lot of losses to make that money player. And I think they'll only be able to hold on that long if they are using some of the money. If they pool all of the DAZN money that they're making in other countries, the profits, if they're reinvesting the international profits from outside the U.S. back into the U.S. product, because otherwise the U.S. product is not paying for itself.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of questions on the U.S. side, no doubt, for this type of money they're paying. But look, I will say Canelo Jacobs is obviously the right fight, the right first giant one that they're going to have. That's going to be a test of how many new subscribers they get for that 1 month. And they've doubled the price, which I think is smart. And the hope that you can stay on for another month, knowing you're getting AJ on June 1st, you're probably getting a a Triple G debut, right? Maybe against
You get the huge Triple G Brandon Adams rumored fight coming on the heels of AJ and Jarrell Miller.
It's just hard because even though they have Bellator and Combate America, they don't seem to have enough yet because they don't have all the Bellator cards. They have a couple select ones that are, they don't seem to have enough yet where if you're an MMA fan, you have to have that. They certainly don't, you know, look, an MLB show is great, but you gotta have, you're basically going after like fight fans who also like baseball, right? Because you don't have enough there to make people have to pay that $9.99 a month yet and go for a year. Really, boxing is the only people who have to have this service right now, a service that they have in this household. So it's going to be interesting. We're going to keep having this Evan Rutkowski to Zone conversation for a while on the business side, but, it's just weird, man. If the pockets of that man are so deep, then, and you know, to succeed on this level, you gotta lose. UFC had to lose for a long time, Rafe, to come back around and win. And they're winning big time right now. Let me ask it to you like this to close the conversation.
Yeah, ask me this question, bro.
It's 2019 right now, okay? Athletes still sleeping with a lot of women. In 2022, will the Zone
sleep with more women?
Will the Zone A,
oh, no, no.
Will the Zone still be broadcasting boxing in the US? And will they be the number one or number two?
Oh, 2022. So we're putting the over under on. Ooh wee. You know what? In my media, now the TV business is a lot different from the digital writing, whatever media that I am more familiar with. In my career, nothing lasts more than 2 or 3 years before the money dries out and they start looking for something new. Time to pivot to video. Time to do whatever. So no, I don't think it's going to last. I think eventually here's why I think it's not going to last. Some of these big rights are going to come up. Some of the NBA, some of the major sports leagues rights are going to come up and DAZN will bid big on them. That is what John Skipper is there to do. He's not there because he is a boxing guy. We worked under him at ESPN and loved high quality long form writing. Helped me get a job at Grantland because of his commitment to that. Loved Scarface the movie, probably.
I mean, I got two words for you. How dare you?
I love that movie too.
Fish scales, John.
I got two. Hit me up on the low, Skip. Brian, what I'm saying is he's not there to turn DAZN into the place for boxing. He's there to get this business rolling so that they can be credible when it comes time to start bidding on a piece on two NBA games a week or on something that will really bring in the mass audience in the United States.
All right, let me ask you this then. Let me amend that. If it's 2022 and they suddenly have two NBA games a week and rights to the ACC basketball conference and, you know, a small piece of something else, do they keep spending this much money on boxing, or was boxing their gateway drug to get really high, John?
Yeah, I think that is a likely scenario if they win. But where I was heading with that is when those rights for the college sports, for the major team sports leagues are available, DAZN is not bidding for this against PBC. They're not bidding for this against Showtime, or they're bidding against huge. They're bidding against Disney, ESPN, Turner, TNT, ABC, the main networks, everything. And as deep as that, people with pockets just as deep who are going to be just as committed to paying big to get DAZN out the paint. And I think they're gonna, that's when the rubber will meet the road. And I don't think DAZN is going to win those bidding wars, even if they put up, cause how much do they have to overpay? Because if you're the NBA and you're cutting a deal and ESPN offers you, let's do just very round numbers, $100 million, like in a Dr. Evil voice, and DAZN offers you $110 million. Well, yeah, you can get more money on DAZN, but you know that you get way more exposure, a whole apparatus to sell your product. You're going to take the slightly slower offer from the bigger platform. And I think that's how it's going to play out, unless they overbid like crazy money, which I don't even know if it's possible. And so, no, I don't think in 3 years, DAZN's still going to be a player like this in the U.S. market.
Oh, wow. That was a nice little, soliloquy you had there. I like that. I like where you're going with that. You solved it. You did it. You just cured it. All right. Hey, Rafe, let's roll on. Showtime said network we talked about that needs to come back with some banging. April 27th, Vegas. Robert Easter Jr. against Rances with Wolves Barthelemy. 140-pound fight. Main event. They're going to have Effie of Jogbu and the co-main against some guy you never heard of. I F with this main event, Rafe. I like this fight a lot. I don't know if this is a Vegas Showtime main event, though, which is kind of where we're at right now with Showtime. We need them to come out with some all-killer, no filler. This is a really good fight for boxing fans. How does it touch you?
I forget who you – who's Easter fighting?
Rances Barthelemy.
Oh, get the hell out of here. Are you serious?
I like this fight. It's going to be fun.
Rances has been trash for a couple of years
now. No, just that Carol Relic fight. Stop it.
I'm not buying it. Is it 140 or 135?
It's 140. It's the main event in Vegas, which I think is a little questionable, but you're going to get
Easter coming up to light welter. That is not a main event for any good boxing card.
It would be a great, like, Brooklyn co-main. It would be fantastic, but that's where we're at right now. Showtime's got to bring it. I'm ready. I'm ready to cash Showtime checks. I love me some Showtime, Rafe.
As a hardcore boxing fan, speaking to all the influential network people who I know hang on every word I say, y'all are spreading this product so thin that I don't even like following this right now. I do it because I like boxing, but this ain't fun watching 8 fights a weekend and getting lucky when one of them is good.
Wow. He spoke it. All right, Rafe, I quickly are going to need you to update your top 3 or 5, depending on how deep you're willing to go, pound for pound after Errol Spence by Murder. I still have Vasily Lomachenko at number 1. I have Terrence Crawford at number 2. I have Errol Spence at number 3 and Ali Usyk at 4, which apparently some hardcores would kill me if they heard that. I forgot who I had at 5. Where are you at now post Spence Garcia in your personal pound for pound?
All right. Well, I'm making this off the top of my head.
I had Canelo five. Sorry. Keep it going.
Yeah. So there's some, look, I think honestly that there are probably 7 or 8 fighters who you can argue deserve to be in any order. And you mentioned 5 of them. I think you also put Srisaket Sorungvisai in there.
Yeah, he's in the top 10, but he's not top 5, right?
If you talk to the hardcores, they'll be like,
you gotta depend on who you talk to, because there's a population of the hardcores who overvalue accomplishment in pound for pound. Accomplishment's part of the pound for pound debate, but to me, there's more value in, I don't want to say more value in the eye test. The eye test is a big part of it, but more value in the idea of if they were in the same division and had the same strengths or advantages in their own division, in that division, that's why somebody like Usyk, I think you would hold against him that he's not a big puncher in his own division. So yeah. If I'm like, if him and Spence were both cruiserweights, I gotta go Spence.
I that's generally how I approach pound for pound lists. I think it is more, I look at it more as a judgment of who I actually think is really the best. And I do think that after this Mikey Garcia fight, if you had Terrence Crawford in your top 2 and your top 3, now there's no reason not to put Errol Spence right next to Terrence Crawford, because both of them have only 1 or 2 really good wins and they just look amazing outside of that. So if you think that they're the 2 best guys in the sport, go for it. Yeah.
What do you think though? This is what the people want. Cause you're not a big pound for pound guy. I know it. You don't jack back to that kind of stuff, but what do you got here? Top 3. Give it to me.
I'm going Crawford, Lomachenko. Jesus, am I going to say this? Canelo?
Wow.
I hate that man.
I can't. I got him at 5, and some people have him at 2. I can't put him there because I thought he lost both Golovkin fights.
Right, because he loses like half of them, his important fights.
I also thought he lost to Trout and Lara, just for the record. Keep going.
I feel the same way, but at the same time, I also feel like he deserves a lot of credit for being in those fights and fighting even on even terms with all those guys. A lot of the people we're putting above him. Oh, you know what? Yeah. See, Lomachenko really does put distance between himself and other top. Like when he's in, he clearly beats very good fighters. But
you're a great fighter, but I fight great.
That historic fighters. Yeah, I'll go Crawford, Lomachenko, Canelo. Do it. I'll be bold. I will be bold.
All right. Closing up our news portion of the week, Floyd Sr. was quoted by somebody. I think it was a Helen Yee type interview in saying Floyd Jr. is training at the moment. Rafe, will we see MAPAC 2 in 2019? And question number two, outside of a Tenshin Nasukawa circus rematch, is there any other active pro boxer that Floyd would face besides Manny Pacquiao in 2019? Go.
I don't think we're going to see it. Is there anybody who faces what after Pacquiao?
Would Floyd fight anybody else but Pacquiao this year? I think we're going to see MAPAC this year. I do think we're going to see it.
Oh, my God. Are you serious? When are they going to announce it?
I wonder if Floyd is thinking more September at this point, because he can't get the May date, because the Cinco de Mayo, because, you know, and why is Floyd just going to come back in the middle of the summer? Now, he fought McGregor in August because Canelo already had the September date, but he tried to F Canelo by doing it a couple weeks earlier to steal his pay-per-view buys. So I would think it's more likely that Floyd would just announce, okay, I'm fighting Pacquiao September. And then Manny, you're not fighting Thurman next. Unless, I don't know. That's a different debate. Is there anybody else Floyd would fight in your mind besides Pacquiao?
No.
Not even AB, nothing like that.
There's no money in it. Where's the money? I mean, he's going to fight because Floyd will never do this, but how awesome would it be to see him come back and take on one of those huge challenges?
No.
Errol Spence, Terrence Crawford, something like that. That would be a dream, I think. Even if he ends up losing, man, that's the kind of thing that could elevate his legacy in a way nothing else could. Losing to one of those guys.
I thought like 2 years ago, or if he would have come back and fought like a Golovkin or a Canelo for the middleweight title, I thought that could have taken his legacy to another level. But you're right, coming back and facing one of these young, hungry lions, I mean, wow.
There is a fighter who could beat Floyd Mayweather. It's younger Floyd Mayweather.
But older Floyd Mayweather against one of these younger guys. Wow, that'd be fun. All right, we got to get out of there and we got to get into interview time, Rafe. Amir Khan, Terrence Crawford, the big pay-per-view fight coming up. We're going to go with Amir first and be back right after that to talk about it. Here we go right now, coming at you. Enjoy it. I got to start off just by saying congratulations, man. If there's a big fight, Amir Khan's going to find his way to get in it. How you feeling, brother?
Oh, I feel great, man. And I think always, you know, it's always amazing to be in big fights. Especially in America. I mean, I'm from England and I've been in the big fights in England, but there's something special about America. Something special when we fight on top of Bill over here. Something else.
Well, the last couple months, Amir, when Mikey Garcia was preparing to fight Errol Spence in their pay-per-view welterweight fight, everyone was going crazy. Mikey Garcia's got the biggest balls we've ever seen. And as that's going on, I'm like, hey guys, Amir Khan kind of does these type of things regularly. Whether you think it's a good idea or not, he's going to take chances and dare to be great. Do you feel like people were forgetting you in that?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I'm always trying to, get the big fights and reach greatness. And by having fights which are very, very hard, very difficult, and I'm never shying away from the biggest names in the world. So, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I saw Mikey box really well against, but lost the fight against Spence. But he showed a lot of courage. He showed a lot of heart by stepping up in the first place, but going up two divisions. So you can't really take that away from him. Overall, it was, I think it's good for me to do the same thing. I mean, people like Mikey kind of motivate me, because that kind of shows that whatever I'm doing is right. And you have to remember, I mean, it's a short career in boxing, but I want to maximize it. I want to maximize it as much as I can.
For sure. Do you have any regrets in moving up like you did, which was similar to Mikey, two weight classes when you took on Canelo Alvarez? Because they say high risk, high reward. Obviously, that fight didn't go well for you, but do you regret it at all?
No, I don't regret it as much, because I always would have, if I didn't take that fight, I always would have thought what would have happened if that fight ever happened. But I took that fight and obviously didn't go my way. I think I was winning on points. I was putting a good fight on till I got caught with that big shot. Now that's boxing for you, you know. I think the shot he hit me with, he would have probably knocked out a lot of people. But I see that if you look at Mikey's fight against Spence, Spence must have been maybe 2 weight categories above, yeah. But when I fought Canelo, I really believe that Canelo must have been about 3 or 4 weight categories above, because when he hydrates, he gets really big. And you can see the size difference. When I looked in that corner and I saw him standing in front of me, he didn't look the same guy that I saw on the way.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I could see that for sure. Now, I got to give you a lot of credit, Amir, because you always carry yourself as a star, even when things in your career aren't going for you, like, right? Like, you've come back from some big defeats and then won some big fights. How are you able to do that? Because you've seen a lot of fighters. They may be the biggest deal when they're undefeated, but they lose that invincibility and they're never the same mentally. How have you always been able to bounce back and then get yourself back into these big fights and remain being a star?
What helps me, honestly, what helps me is praying. I pray quite a lot. And that kind of helps me. You know, when you've got God on your side, and you had these hard fights, and then you go into a fight and lose a fight, and people think that's it, you're done, and you're finished. And then you come back with a big bang again, and you prove people wrong. And also, you know, I'm doing it for my children, I'm doing it for my family. So that's my motivation, you know? You do it for them, and that's what kind of gives me that push, really. But there have come times where, you know, I've had some defeats, and a lot of people did say to me that, oh, he's done now, he's not going to come back, and I've bounced back again and been back in a big fight again.
Yeah, I mean, do you think people underestimate your toughness in that regard?
Oh, definitely, definitely. I mean, look, I've done it numerous times. I've fought the best, and I've been a professional boxer for 14 years, and in the last 10 years, I've been fighting world-class fighters. And for the last 10 years, to fight world-class fighters and fight for belts and fight in the biggest arenas, from the MGM, and the Madison Square Garden and the Barclays Center. I mean, it's amazing. So the last 10 years have been crazy for me. I mean, normally people have a very short career as a professional, but I've been quite the lucky ones. I've had 10 years and I'm going strong from year one to year 10. I've been going strong.
For sure. Now you'll be fighting, a guy in Terrence Crawford, obviously, who, you know, you can take your pick on who you think the pound-for-pound king is. There are a lot of people who think Crawford is. So when you look at this guy, undefeated, star at welterweight, what do you see that gives you that confidence that you can get one up on him on the highest stage here at MSG?
I don't think Terrence has fought anyone like me. I mean, I work very hard. I always work like a challenger. This is a fight where I'm going into the fight as the underdog. And normally when I go into every fight, I'm the guy who's supposed to be winning. I'm the bigger guy. I'm the better guy. This time I'm going to a fight, someone who's my own weight, who's at my own weight division. Someone who, I really think I'm physically bigger than, I'm quicker than, I'm stronger than. And maybe I've got a little bit more experience than him. I've been in bigger fights and I've got a better resume. But they've got him as unbeaten. He's unbeaten, and they've got him as one of the best pound-for-pound fighters in the world. I think this is my time now. And it's all about the timing in boxing, and I think this just fell at the right time where after 2 wins, I'm coming back. After the last, like, 2 fights ago, it was a Canelo fight. I've redeemed myself. I've got the 2 good wins on my side, and now I'm back in a big fight again. And this is my time now to show where I really belong, fighting someone who's my own weight and size.
I mean, this could ultimately be a beautiful matchup in terms of hand speed, in terms of boxing. Do you look at this as a chess match that you can win, or are you really open to wherever this fight goes?
We work in the gym. So we work in, if it's going to go down as a chess match, we're both good boxers. He's a southpaw, I'm orthodox, in stance. He's quick as well. He's sharp. He's very experienced. If it'll be a game of chess, it will be very tricky. And then if he wants to come to fight, I'm going to be ready for that as well. So I've been working everything. I've been working on all different styles. If he wants to come forward and exchange, we'll be ready. If he wants to have a game of chess, then we'll make it that way as well.
I mean, there's certainly tape on Bud going back over a few different weight classes, but arguably the most success anybody ever had against him was down there at lightweight when Yuriorkis Gamboa for 4 or 5 rounds was really using that speed to confuse Crawford. Is that sort of something you look at, knowing how fast your hands are, that there's something there to learn from that fight?
Yeah, definitely. I've been watching that fight, and you know he still won that fight, but I saw that he had some problems in that fight. Now, we're not going to definitely copy what Gamboa did. We're going to be smart in the fight. We're going to use my speed. Speed's something I have, and I'm going to use that. Is he going to cope with my speed? I feel that I'm a lot faster than Gamboa was, and a lot more accurate. I've been in the game a longer time and I fought better opponents than Gamboa did. I'll be physically a lot stronger as well. So I'm sure, you know, he's going to be ready. He's going to be trained, is Crawford. But we're going to do what we have to do to win this fight, no matter what. I mean, I've been training very hard for this fight and I see that he does have problems sometimes. But one thing about Crawford, he adapts quite quickly. So we can't really just focus on one thing. We have to focus on the newest things because he is a very experienced fighter who adapts quite well and we have to keep on changing the game plan.
Now, you've been, you've been to the top. You've been in pay-per-views in the States. You've been in Las Vegas. You've even been to the world's most famous arena, Madison Square Garden, where this fight will take place on ESPN pay-per-view. That was 2010, Paulie Malignaggi, when you were climbing up the ladder. Look, I grew up not, you know, a couple hours away from MSG. To me, Amir, that's the top. That's as big as it gets. What did it feel like for you inside that building when you fought Malignaggi? Did you get those same feels?
Yeah, definitely you get the goosebumps. It's amazing when you're in that arena and you've got your face all over the place, on the arena, on the posters in New York, on the big screen. And that's when you know you hit it big time. So when I was there first time, it was against Paulie Malignaggi. That was in 2010, 9 years ago. I mean, it's crazy how time flies. And that was my first fight in America. And to have my first fight in America at the Madison Square Garden was amazing. And now again, I'm going back there and I had great success the first time. I'm sure we can have great success there again. I mean, every time I fought in New York and whoever I fought from New York, I've beaten in good style. So hopefully this is going to be another good one for me.
Now, Crawford has proven to be a pretty good ratings draw, whether it be on ESPN or HBO. But to be honest, in the States, he certainly hasn't crossed over to the level of the athletes in the team sports. You know, there's still, you can walk around the street. Not everybody's going to have heard of Terrence Crawford. So considering that British fans travel anywhere, do you think you'll be competing here for in terms of grabbing the crowd inside MSG on this night in your favor?
You know, honestly, I really believe that I will have more fans than Crawford going into this fight. Being in New York, now you see that the British like to travel. So you'll have a lot of Brits that will want to come to see this fight. It's a big world title fight. The pound for pound, one of the best pound for pound fighters is Terrence Crawford. So I'm sure they'll want to see that. And it's only New York, which is not a long flight for the people in the UK. Not only that, I've got a massive fan base in New York. It's where my wife is from. And I don't know, when I walk the streets in New York, I'm always having people come over to me and question me, when are you fighting back in New York again? So I think this is a time where they can get a chance to see me fight once again in New York. So I really believe that I will have a bigger fan base than Crawford come April 20th.
That could be very, very interesting. Now, I saw a tweet from Bob Arum of Top Rank, who, of course, is promoting this fight on Monday. He was taking a shot at Mikey Garcia. He says, unlike Mikey Garcia, Amir Khan goes into a fight intending to win. His boxing ability is phenomenal. He could give Terrence Crawford fits. He's capable of pulling the upset. Now, Amir, that's a complimentary take from the Bob father. But you've read his quotes before. He can be a salty guy. It wasn't 1 year, 2 years ago that he was saying you had no chance. Who's Amir Khan? What do you think when you hear Bob suddenly putting you over here?
He's a promoter at the end of the day. And Bob is going to talk and say things to promote fights. And at the same time, he's going to try to put you down. When I was with a different promoter, maybe he didn't get on with that promoter. And I tried to get the Manny Pacquiao fight. I got really close to it, but Bob then decided for me not to take that fight and didn't want to give me that fight. Now, against Crawford, he knows that, you know, maybe it's sunk in now where he knows the fight's getting closer. There's no turning back now. So he has to promote it, but he knows that there is a risk as well in this fight because I can pull an upset off, you know. So I think he is coming to reality now and it is coming to him that, you know what, things can go wrong for him in this fight. And okay, fine, he's having a dig at Mikey Garcia. Maybe Mikey, it felt like Mikey was just there as an opponent. I mean, one thing about me is I don't care in any fight I go into, I try to win. Even if that means I get caught with a big shot, I get knocked out, I try to go in there and give my all, even if it means getting knocked out. So that's the type of guy I am. I like to fight with my heart and I like to give it my all.
For sure. Now, I got to ask you here. The reason why, I mean, you're always seeking big fights, so fans love you. You fight with heart, so fans love you twice as much. But you seem to be able to circumvent in America sort of the political and network things that always block big fights from happening. You're fighting Crawford, but people have wanted Crawford to fight, I don't know, name them, right? Spence, Sean Porter, Keith Thurman. We've wanted to see Crawford against all those guys. How are you able to do it? Are you still with Al Heyman? How are you able to circumvent that where the other guys always say, you know, can't make it happen politically?
Well, end of the day, I think it's up to the fighter as well as the promoter himself. Now, I'm a free agent as well as being with a matchroom in the UK. So when this fight come to me and I had the option to take this fight, me as a fighter with my promoter, I have a say as well. So I decided to take this fight and tell my promoter that I want this fight. Now, you have to make it happen. And my promoter went and said to me, go ahead and go make it happen then. If you really want the fight and you believe in it, and you can win this fight, then make it happen. Now, with these other fighters that you've got, the Spences out there, the Thurmans out there, they can make these fights happen. But you have to push it a little bit, and you have to believe in yourself. And with me, I've never ducked away from any big fight. Whenever I've had the opportunity, normally it's me on the other side who's calling fighters out, and I don't get those fights. For example, Manny Pacquiao, Mayweather, these are fights I never got. But I'm just that type of guy. You know, I take them risk fights. Maybe that's why... I do get these big fights when I want them, because people know I come to fight and I don't fear anyone. But it's up to the fighter. It's really up to the individual. If you really want to fight someone, you can make it happen, regardless which promoter you're with.
That's very interesting, because we just saw Deontay Wilder get lured from a bunch of different TV networks at once, and he seems to be staying put, and people are making accusations, but we never know what's going through a fighter's mind. But Amir Khan seems to show up on any channel at any time. So, I mean, maybe you're just more vocal. You know what you want. You speak up and you get it done. I have to commend that, Amir.
Exactly. I mean, that's what it's all about. It's all about speaking up and knowing what you want and doing it the right way. I mean, if you want to fight and you tell your promoter, I want this fight, it'll always come to a point. I mean, look, there'll be talks now on Mikey and Crawford. No, sorry, not Crawford and Spence, sorry. And this is where Crawford and Spence, maybe after my fight or maybe down the line in the future, should say, we want this fight and we're going to make it happen. Regardless what TV channel it's going to be on, let's do it for the fans. Let's do it for boxing. And let's do it. I mean, this is why companies like UFC, MMA, is probably surpassing boxing, because the best are fighting the best. And in boxing, we don't really get that. You know, in boxing, we kind of just fall a little bit short, the best fighting the best. But like I said, I'm not one of them, and I'm trying to give the fans the best fights out there. As long as I'm in boxing, I'm trying to give the biggest fights and the best fights to them. And it's possible. Any fight is possible.
Now, you mentioned you got really close to both Mayweather and Pacquiao, and I felt bad for your Amir in the Floyd situation. And look, he's probably retired for good or we don't know, whatever. But like, when you look back on that whole soap opera of you chasing Floyd, why do you think in the end it didn't happen? Was he just being a jerk, or do you think in the back of his head he's saying, I'm not going to risk it against a guy with this hand speed? Where are you at now, years later, when you look back at that?
I mean, looking back at it now, I mean, he fought a guy who I already beat, which was Mike Cross Maidana. He'd done a poll who he should fight, and everyone wanted me to fight him. I just really believe that he just never wanted to fight me. He knows stylistically it's a very bad fight for him. And he probably thought, I'd rather take an easy option. I don't need to fight Amir. But who knows? I mean, he don't know the truth. Maybe he was offered more money fighting someone else. It's just hard. You know, boxing now is not only the best fighting the best, it's more of a business as well. Floyd sees it as a business. And unfortunately, that fight didn't happen between us.
Now, win or lose against Crawford, I feel like you're going to fight Manny Pacquiao one day. And I know it's such a great story because it goes back to his prime, let's say 2011, 2012, when you're with Freddie, so is he. And I'm sure there were legendary sparring matches going on. You still see that fight as a potential reality? And are you itching for it?
Yeah, I mean, I love that fight, definitely. I mean, Manny Pacquiao is a legend in the game. And I want to be in those legendary fights. So the day when I do call it a day, from boxing and I leave boxing, people do remember me as one of the guys who fought the best and never was afraid to fight the best. And Manny Pacquiao is definitely one name I love to fight. And I've been pushing for that fight for a long time. But all I can do is try. I can only try and try. And if a fight comes off, it comes off. If it doesn't, then, you know, at least everyone knows that I try to get the biggest fights and the best fights.
Now, Amir, you were sparring prime Manny Pacquiao. I mean, what were those like? Were you getting the better of him?
Yeah, I mean, we worked very hard. I mean, it was an amazing experience for me at first, you know, because I just come from the UK, being a young fighter, and started my career in America under Freddie Roach, and it was, what a great experience. I mean, the first day when I was sparring, he said, "Oh, get in the ring with Manny Pacquiao," and at that time, Manny Pacquiao was one of the most dangerous fighters in the world, and I was like, "Are you sure you want me to spar Manny Pacquiao? Like, this is my first spar." He's like, "Yeah." So for me, it was brilliant because for my confidence, it really did build me up. And when I started doing so well against him, that's when I thought, wow, you know, I've got a chance here to one day become a world champion. And then it was from there when I started believing in myself. And that's when I started winning world titles. I started becoming, going up the pound rankings and starting getting the big fights.
That's cool. That's cool. Not a close. And of course, we're all excited about this Terrence Crawford fight. It's really right up there with, let's say, Canelo Jacobs as the biggest fights of the year. We thought it was going to be Kell Brook. Everybody thought it was going to be Kell Brook. Kell Brook thought it was going to be Kell Brook. Are you now hanging the carrot in front of his head like Floyd once did to you?
You know what? I try not to, because I know how I felt when Floyd did that to me. Now, it's just the opportunity I had. Now, looking at his last fight he fought against, I can't remember the guy's name. He didn't really box that well. I really wanted him to go into that fight in Kell's last fight and knock the guy out and look like a beast and, you know, come out and then call me out. But he looked so bad in the fight that really everyone started to say, it's not worth me fighting him. It's going to be a walk in the park. And then the option come between myself, like me fighting Crawford. Now, when will I ever get the opportunity again to fight for a pound for pound title, fight one of the best pound for pound fights in the world, fight for another world title? I thought this is a great chance for me to do this again. And it's a great fight that's going to motivate me as well. So that's why I took this fight over the Kell Brook fight. So Kell is from the UK. That fight can go and happen in the future again, and as long as he keeps winning and he keeps out of trouble. But, you know, at the moment, for me, what makes more sense is Crawford, and I think anyone in my position would have taken this fight over a Kell Brook fight.
Yeah, you laid that out well. I mean, even a critic of Amir Khan you nailed it. He didn't look great in his last fight. I completely understand it as well. And like you said, you could be fighting the best fighter of the world, and if you beat him, man, you're right up there in that discussion against the pound for pound best.
Yes, we're prize fighters, aren't we? We're prize fighters, and we want to make the most we can, and especially if it's on pay-per-view. And now, if you're fighting someone that didn't really look the best in his last fight, your pay-per-view numbers are not going to be that good, because people are going to be thinking you're going to walk in the park and beat this guy quite easily. So I have to make sure that I'm fighting a Kell Brook who is wanting to win, not doing it for the payday, wanting to win.
Yeah. I want to close with this, Amir, and it's been great chatting with you. I cover the WWE as well. On my podcast last week, I had a WWE wrestler named Mustafa Ali, and he had an amazing story he wanted to tell of how his whole way on the way up the ladder, they wanted him to be a bad guy, and he's a practicing Muslim. His parents are from Pakistani and Indian descent, and he fought the system the whole way and said, why can't I be a good guy? Why can't I represent my skin, my religion, people who look like me in a positive light? I have to believe that you've gone through some similar prejudices on your way up the ladder. How important is it for you to have that same message and put that out in the world?
Oh, yeah, I think it's very important. You know, I'm a Muslim, and there's a lot of things that, you know, but Muslims don't have a good name, especially with what's going on with the 9/11 and everything else. And I think we are all seen all to be the same. So whenever you mention, oh, he's a Muslim, they're going to say, oh, he's a terrorist and this and that. So I want to show that. I looked at this number and it was 0.05% of the people in the world who have done bad as Muslims were terrorists. 0.05%, which is a tiny number, tiny percentage. So what about the others? I mean, the others are like myself, who are totally against terrorism, totally against killing innocent people. So we stand against killing innocent people and terrorism. And I'm one of them people to promote that all the time. So I think this Mustafa Ali is doing the same as me. I think we need more role models like Mustafa and myself to go out there and talk and not be afraid and hide away and talk about our religion and talk about how much we are against terrorism, and we are Muslims. And what Muslims, what our religion really teaches is peace and loving each other, you know. So I think people have just got the wrong end of the stick, and I want to be like a spokesman for our people, and hopefully, you know, we can get more people like this.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. It's a great message, and you're able to be a role model for so many young people and give them the same kind of hope. Hey, Amir, great talking to you, man. We can't wait. ESPN pay-per-view for this fight. Always a pleasure. We're always a gentleman. I really wish you the best in this one.
Oh, appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you very much. Lovely speaking to you guys.
All right, Rafe. I got to say this. If I'm picking an all-interview team, and it's really always been this way, Amir Khan's a fun-ass interview. He's a real nice guy. And when you talk to him, you begin to realize that there's a lot of reasons to love Amir Khan. Always wants to fight the best. Always willing to go out on a shield and show you that the guy has balls. I know that he can talk himself into making people hate him. And the fact that he's so cocky superstar yet has a often weak chin. People think he's a clown. And yeah, maybe AJ touched W. Rafe, why should we do anything but love this man?
It's interesting because you're right. I mean, and he sounded really good in that interview. You, Brian, really got the best out of that man. You might want to be his trainer, but,
I could whisper sweet nothings in there like Verge.
You got to. That's the way you reach a fighter. He sounded good. Like he gave Crawford a lot of credit for how good he is, for the way that Crawford gives you different looks in fights, for the way, for just how big of a challenge it would be to go in there and try and beat this guy who looks like he's really at the top of the sport right now, which is something that, Amir Khan has been trying to do almost every, at all times over the last 5 years, even when he's not getting those fights. So he sounded good, and he sounded like he's sort of clear-headed and approaching this the right way, and it made me, believe that he's going to come in and give a good effort. And that makes me more excited about April 20th as a fight, even, I hate to say it, as a pay-per-view event, because it is one. It makes me feel like you're going to get a version of Amir Khan that makes Terrence Crawford either show how spectacular he is if he blows through him, or test him a little bit, give him a little bit of a Gamboa, a few things to figure out in the first four rounds before kind of taking over and winning that fight. The other interesting thing, and this is maybe not from the interview, but just, over the course of his career, Amir Khan is he's a southpaw killer, right? He's always been
That's
great against southpaws. And to Terrence Crawford's whole switch hitting, more dangerous as a southpaw thing, is Bud going to go to that? If he does and he whoops Amir Khan in a southpaw position, are you like, oh my God, how you did it in a southpaw stance too? Anyway, that's an interesting wrinkle to this fight.
I mean, look, the hand speed's real. He's going to be in this fight just like he was in it with Canelo until he got stopped. He was certainly in it putting it on Danny Garcia until he got stopped. He'll be in it with those skills.
I believe there are some fights where you look at Amir Khan and he's operating at Usain Bolt level speed.
Well, I mean, Dwyer, come on. By the way, Dwyer's taking some hard L's lately, right? Like ripping Errol Spence's back foot game and then having to describe how Mikey Garcia let him down. I mean, he's been saying for a while that Pacquiao beat Spence. I mean, tell me if I'm wrong. Listen to this. Tell me if Richard's not setting up to back Khan in this.
You're not getting value with Crawford. Especially not when Amir Khan is a 6-1 underdog. Folks, that's a joke line. You're telling me that if these guys fought seven times, Amir Khan would only win once? I don't believe that, not for a second. Let me also point out, too, the way I think life really works. Right? Don't fall in love with the idea of, oh, he's a better man than the opponent. So I'm just going to take the better man in the fight. He should win. Right? I got news for you. Right? Better men often lose in matches.
Rafe, I'm not sure what to take from that. Maybe it's kind of better man on the inside than Bud. Is Dwyer setting up for the upset here?
That's a lot to swallow. I mean, first of all, towards the end of that, I feel like we went into therapy and he's talking about my life, like, man, I always thought I was the better man. I just keep taking L's left and right. Matches, everything. Anyway, but.
And he needs to, by the way, he needs to take his own advice.
Don't fall in love
with fighters who no longer exist.
Because I'm not even sure, like, 2012 Americana exists anymore. Because, like, no. However you want to break down a fight, eventually they're going to punch. And then Julio Diaz almost stopped him. Sammy Vargas almost stopped him. You know, like, yes. Come on.
This is all true. Look, we gotta give Dwyer credit. He approaches this, as he tells us all the time, as a hedge better, right? He doesn't actually think that Amir Khan should win this fight. He thinks that there is a chance that he could come out galvanized, have the best night of his career, and you know, crazy things happen in boxing. And to him, on long odds, that's worth the chance. And of course, he's gonna hedge that with Crawford by knockout. The classic Dwyer hedge. I mean, it's almost like you can, at this point, I know how Dwyer is betting every fight. He's taking the underdog and he's hedging the favorite by knockout.
You cracked the code already, Rafe?
I've seen a lot of Dwyer.
I mean, you're right, because he did hedge it a second later by telling us.
Bud Crawford is dangerous.
We already know he thinks he's the BEST at welterweight.
Dangerous,
so.
Brian. Yeah. But I do agree. You know the one thing I disagree with there, though, that Dwyer said? I don't just think that if Amir Khan and Terrence Crawford fight seven times, Amir Khan only wins once. I think that he loses seven times. I think that Terrence Crawford wins seven times. I think they fight 10 times. Terrence Crawford wins 10 times.
Yeah.
I think that he's that good. And one thing, I do think that Khan has, he's still fast. He's got the hands. I don't think his feet are what they were. He used to have, I mean, you talked to Paulie Malignaggi about how quickly Khan collapsed the pocket, was in and out of distance and with those fast hands, and how hard that was for a guy who fought Malignaggi style to deal with back in 2010. Man, it's almost 10 years ago.
Wow.
That Khan no longer exists. Don't fall in love with a fighter who no longer exists. I think his legs aren't as fast or as fresh, which obviously happens to pretty much all fighters. Still got some hand speed, still got some pop, still got all that heart.
Don't give me the full load right now, all right? Tease the bag a little. We're going to have a full preview.
All right, look, fine. Here's my thing. Here's my big prediction. Terrence Crawford is going to look like the faster fighter in almost every regard when they fight.
Wow. I just, for the last time, we got to pour one out for Amir's package. Because the guy, I mean, like, he explained really well why he turned down Kell Brook and went after the best fighter in the world, arguably.
Are you talking about the package that we saw on Twitter that time?
Because they had a full package. Where are they going to get that full package today? Who puts their balls on the line?
No, not his actual package, which he's shown before on the internet, but just like he puts his balls on the line every single time, right, for better or worse, and makes big fights. Look, I couldn't get him to answer whether he's like officially still with Al or is Al just collecting a percentage, but it's obvious that he's in a friends with benefits plan with Al that no other PBC fighter gets. But you heard his speech about the reason why I keep fighting the best despite, you know, network agreements and promotional beefs and all that, is because I ask for it. Do you think more PBC guys could and should listen to that interview we just did, or I just did with Amir, and ask for it more? Like, can Sean Porter pick up the phone and say, Al, I want to fight Terrence Crawford next. Let's do it on ESPN pay-per-view. Let's make it happen.
Yes, I think fighters should, if they're not doing that, they should do that. If they should not just sit there and do the famous Manny line.
It's not should they, it's will they, Rafe. That's the thing.
Will they? I don't think they will, because one, if they are looking at Amir Khan as an example of this, they have some examples of things that have happened to Amir Khan in boxing rings that are good reasons why you don't do that. If you're trying to maximize your career earnings and minimize the damage you suffer in this very violent sport.
Very true.
We respect Khan a great deal for the way he conducts himself in that regard, but I don't think it ain't Floyd Mayweather style, you know, career chess.
All right. Let's hear from Bud right here, the champion himself, Terrence Crawford, coming at you. Enjoy. All right, great to talk to you as always, Bud. But even greater this time, because this is the big leagues now. We're talking pay-per-view, ESPN, April 20th, the world's most famous arena when you defend your welterweight title against Amir Khan. Hey, Bud, this is big business. This is what you want in this sport. How fired up are you for this night?
I'm excited. I just can't wait to go out there and go put on a show.
This is the best division in the sport, really, going back 20 years. And it's as deep right now, Terrence, I'd say personally, as I've seen it since really that Trinidad, De La Hoya, Mosley, Quarte area, a couple other names in there. You agree with that statement? Are you looking at this as a historic period for this weight division? How do you sort of see it?
Of course, it's a great division right now. There's a lot of great fighters in the division that's making a name for themselves, and I'm just happy to be a part of it.
And, of course, we all want to see them face each other, so we can naturally find out who's the man right now. But I think until we see that, we're starting to see that, critically, pound for pound-wise, I think universally you are getting the call right now. For as great as Errol Spence looks, for Keith Thurman coming back, for Manny still lingering, I'm seeing almost universal you're getting the call as the best in class at the moment. You keep up on this at all? How much does that matter to you until you get a chance to fight these guys that people sort of look at you as best in show?
I get a mixture. A lot of people say I'm the best. Some say Errol Spence the best. You have quite a few say Keith Thurman is the best. We won't know until we all fight each other, and the last man standing will be crowned the best of the division.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And look, this is going to be a fun fight for you against Amir Khan because of his style, because of his name, the pay-per-view, the glitz and glamour that comes with being at MSG. I got a lot of respect for Amir Khan's balls, Terrence, because this guy will fight any big name at any time, and he didn't back away from this. How much does that change when you're going in there against the guy? Yeah, he's got flaws. Everybody's got flaws. But, man, this guy comes to win.
Everybody come to win. I haven't fought any top opponent that came to lay down. And yeah, I was saying this is a big opportunity for him. So nobody's really going to come to lay down. I don't expect him to come to lay down. I expect a good, hard fight come fight night. And I'm looking to be spectacular in my fight come April 21.
All right, when you look at Khan's recent run, it could be a mixed bag. Yet at the same time, yeah, he was knocked out at middleweight against Canelo Alvarez, but he's never lost as a welterweight. And the only loss he's had against a guy at his weight class, you got to go back to 2012 and Danny Garcia. So where do you see Khan at age 32? How dangerous is he compared to the best Amir Khan we've seen before?
Oh, he's very dangerous. He has the skills. He has the experience. He's not just fast. He knows what he's doing in there. And I got to be careful with how I approach this fight.
Speed is always a factor when you're facing Amir Khan. He says, when I talked to him last week, he watched the Gamboa fight. He saw maybe there's an opening there that speed can be a big factor against you. How do you counter that?
Well, listen, timing beats speed any day of the week. So, you know, of course, Gamboa, speed, he had some success early on in the fight, but it just wasn't his speed. I believe it was his height as well. And I just feel like, you know, we capitalized on everything we had to capitalize on, and we got the victory. So the rest is history.
Khan mentioned one thing. He says he considers you a southpaw, Terrence, because a lot of your fights end up that way, where you make a change. And that's something you've been able to use brilliantly at any point, whether you're behind or you need to give your opponent a different look. You go southpaw, it feels like the fight ends in terms of competitiveness. He's preparing for you to go southpaw. Do you plan out ahead of time when you're going to make that change? I mean, do you know right now how you plan on starting and how you plan on finishing against Khan?
Not really. It's just how to fight those. You can plan on whatever you want to plan on, but it still is not going to change anything. I feel like I'm the better fighter. And come fight night, I'm going to prove that.
What's your thought about the idea? Khan's had some chin issues at times. Even in wins, guys have knocked him down that you would say maybe they're not the biggest puncher. I mean, heck, if you took away that chin issue, maybe Khan would be one of the better fighters of this era. Is that something that you know, hey, I can go after that if I need to? Or is it the kind of thing you can't put your too much stock into that? How do you see the chin issues that have followed Amir?
I don't too much worry about that. You know, being that styles make fights. You know, and my style is a different style than the styles that he's been up against. So my job is to focus on what I need to focus on to get the win come fight night. I'm not too much concerned about how Khan's gonna, you know, come in or whatnot or how he's gonna fight. I'm going in there to fight my fight, and that's all that I'm focused on right now.
Talk to Amir about fighting at MSG. He's fought there before. You fought there before a few times. But considering how well British fans travel and considering the star that Amir has been, he went out and said, look, I think I'll have more fans on April 20th inside that building than Terrence will have. Do you agree with that? Does it matter to you? Where do you sit with that?
Well, we'll see. You know, we'll see. I don't, you know, too much care to think about what he thinks. It doesn't matter. We still got to fight.
That's fair. I can stand behind that. Now let's talk about this as you go into this fight. It's big business now. We just saw Errol Spence and Mike ERC on pay-per-view. You've been on the pay-per-view level before, but this is a bigger opportunity when you consider it's ESPN. You're the face in many ways of boxing on ESPN. How competitive are you from the business standpoint where, yeah, you want to beat Amir. I'm sure you want to do it impressively, but do you have a certain number in your mind competition-wise of I got to move this much product as a brand? How much are you competing in that realm against the other fighters, Terrence?
I really too much don't worry about that. I let my team worry about that. My main focus is making sure that I'm 100% come fight night and that I make sure I get the win. That's the only thing that's on my mind right now. All the other stuff I can think about it and worry about it after the fight, but my main focus is on Amir Khan.
All right. Well, you mentioned your team there. Part of the extended team is, of course, Top Rank promoter Bob Arum, the Bob father, the OG. I mean, this guy's wilding out, Terrence. Every time I talk to him, he's talking about weed and getting high. This guy's crazy. We know that. But one statement he keeps making lately is Terrence Crawford is the best welterweight I've ever seen, even better than Sugar Ray Leonard. When people hear that, they go, wow, because there's a respect factor. Leonard's the all-time great, of course. But, Terrence, people aren't necessarily arguing against it. There's some shock value in hearing that. But they're going, hey, Terrence looks pretty damn good up to this point. When you hear Bob say that, I'm interested how you respond. Because some guys might feel the pressure. Some guys might say, I'm already better than him. How do you respond when Bob runs his mouth like that?
I don't respond like anything. I just let him, you know, rate me. He's my promoter, and he's promoted a lot of great fighters in the past. And for him to rate me that high, you know, it just a telling to where I've taken my career from, you know, 2008 to now. To not even 2008, from 2014 when I first won my first world title. So, you know, for me to be accomplishing the things that I have accomplished in the sport of boxing in a short period of time from when I unified the division with Victor Postol, it just tells how my career is blossoming.
Definitely. I think the thing that separates you in my mind, Terrence, when I declare you of the welterweights, I think you're the pound for pound best. And it's not just the skill. You got tremendous skills. We know that. In fact, I think maybe from a true skill, creativity, adjustments, you might be the best in that category as well. But I think you've got a backbone. I think you've got a level of dog inside of you that just is different than a lot of these other guys. How many people in this division do you think have that? That old school, no matter what, I'm going to go in there and get the win. Is it something that's lost on this new generation? Do you see it in the other big welterweights when you watch them?
I don't know. You just have to, you have to see. They got to get put through the test. You know, anybody can say, oh, I have dog in me, or I have this, or I have that. And if you never been through anything to show you have dog or you can overcome certain obstacles, then all you're doing is just, you know, stating an opinion because we don't know.
Because sometimes I'm going to just use an example. I'm not calling these guys out, but, you know, we saw, let's say, for example, Keith Thurman get a good win over Danny Garcia a couple of years ago, but you hear the haters on the internet going, well, yeah, he kind of ran the last few rounds. Or even Sean Porter gets a close win over Ordenis Ugas, but a lot of people saying, well, Ugas looked better. Sean kind of ran out down the stretch. I never see Terrence Crawford not finish a fight as strong as he possibly can. So is that something maybe that might separate you from the other guys?
A win is a win. You know, I don't knock those guys for how they finish the fight, long as they finish it. You know, boxing is a crazy sport. We all out here fighting, you know, our heart outs and doing everything we possibly can to get the win. So that's our main goal and our objective is to get the win. So however the win comes, a win is a win.
That's a very fair statement. I can't argue against that, bud. You're a very fair man. Now tell me your thoughts on Spence's victory over Mikey Garcia. We didn't know if it was going to be a mismatch coming in. We didn't know if it was going to be a career-defining fight. Spence looked fantastic in the end. How did you rate the performances of both fighters?
Oh, he did. Spence did real good. You know, he utilized his jab, his distance. He didn't let Mikey Garcia get in the rhythm or get in his distance and his range. Mikey Garcia, much shorter, arm shorter, he's much slower. So I expected Spence to do what he did in that fight. I actually picked Spence to win. A lot of people asked me did I think he was going to knock him out, and I said, I don't know. It just depends on how Mikey Garcia fight. And as you see, Mikey Garcia was very defensive. Like, he didn't really, you know, let his hands go. And not that he didn't try. He just couldn't because he was at a distance where his arms wouldn't let him because his arms was much shorter than Spence's arms. So Spence can hit him where Mikey Garcia's arms is too short. He couldn't hit him. So he had to take more chances and risks than Spence did because Spence was on the outside, and I believe that he thought Spence was going to try to walk him down and push him around, and that would give him the opportunity to catch Spence in the middle of those transactions, but Spence showed him a different look that he wasn't prepared for and got the unanimous decision.
Do you think Mikey should continue campaigning at welterweight?
I don't know. You know, who knows? His body didn't look like a welterweight. I believe he still can go down even to 140, 135. But if you want to, he still can campaign at 147. He didn't get knocked out. He took a lot of punishment, but at the same time, he withstand the storm and, you know, he made it to the finish line.
All right, well, as you already know, you do a lot more of these interviews than just this one. Everybody's going to ask you about Spence until it happens. People are now saying, well, maybe we can build a Mayweather-Pacquiao-type build where two different networks get involved and we wait a few years. That did great business for Mayweather and Pacquiao, and then we finally saw it. How much you care right now about what Spence is doing? I mean, are you behind the scenes knocking on doors saying, as soon as we can possibly do this, I need to fight Spence and prove I'm number one?
Well, I believe I'm number one. I've been saying I'm ready whenever, whenever the fight is ready to get made. But like I said, my main focus is not Spence right now. I'm more focused on Amir Khan, you know, so that's my, number one priority right now. And after the fight, then we can talk about, possible fights in the future. But like I said, I'm ready and willing to fight any and everybody in the division. That's, the top welterweight.
If you get through Khan, and no disrespect to Khan, you're not looking past him. I certainly understand that. But it's no lie politically, Terrence, that whether we're talking about a Spence, a Thurman, a Porter, they, Pacquiao, they have more options on their side of the street politically than you do. So how do you get one of them to cross over? Because Porter has gone public and said he did receive an offer from Top Rank to fight you last time. And after he beat Ugas, he said, I'd love to fight Crawford. We've got business together. Can that happen from where you sit right now? If you beat Amir Khan, can you close 2019 against a big name PBC guy?
I don't know. I don't believe that's what Porter said. He said, if me and him was going to fight, it's going to be up to us, not the promoters. I believe that's what he said. Being that me and Porter is actually good friends, being good friends since the amateur days, so that would probably be one of the last welterweights I ever fight. If we ever did fight, you know, we'll probably fight because that's the last fight to fight. But as far as all the other welterweights in the division, whenever, you know, like I said, I'm not ducking no wreck. I'm here, you know, to claim my throne.
And how has your career changed since Top Rank moving business to ESPN? And like I mentioned, you know, whether it's you or Lomachenko, you guys are the face of where this is going. How has that changed things for you?
I really can't say, you know, of course there's more people that watch ESPN, than HBO. So the following has gotten bigger. There's a bigger following that's watching you, and it's on basic cable. So, you know, more people can actually see you than fighting on premium cable. So that's a plus.
That's fair. I wanted to ask you this as we close here, Terrence. It's been great talking to you. There's become sort of a stigma that's associated with fighters from different areas. And I'm not saying stigma in a bad way. If somebody tells me they're a Philly fighter, I know they're going to go and fight till the final blow. They're going to be there the entire time. You're putting Omaha on the map in a lot of ways in terms of boxing. What's an Omaha fighter? What does that mean?
People that say they Philly fighters and they New York or Texas or California, those are bigger cities that's known for, you know, boxing and stuff like that. But it don't matter where you're from. You know, I just believe it's the person. You know, there's great fighters and great champions from all over the world that came out of nowhere that you would never thought they would come out of. You know, just because you're from Philly, that don't make you better than a person from Iowa or something like that, you know, that you don't know nothing about. Because, you know, Philly might get more attention than this fighter from Iowa, but at the same time, you see it time and time again, you know, this fighter that has all this backing and support lose to this fighter that nobody really knows about because he never had the opportunity to get the same backing as this Philly fighter. So it's just the fighter. I don't believe it's where you at. Of course, if you in those bigger cities, you're going to have better opportunities than a person coming from Nebraska or Iowa. But I'm changing that for Nebraska right now, you know, as we speak. But, you know, the sparring the management, the promotion, and just everything that's around the boxing. You know, like right now, New York used to be the boxing mecca for professional boxing fights, but now Las Vegas has taken that over. So things and times change.
Yeah, that's fair. You ever brought with that dude Ron Stander?
No, I know Ron Stander. You know, Ron's a good dude. He always support him and his wife. They come out to my fights. You know, they always wish me well, and I've been knowing Ron since I was a little kid.
That's awesome. You've taken what he's built in Omaha and taken it to a whole new level, Terrence. Great to see you, man. We'll see you in the ring. Pay-per-view ESPN, April 20th, MSG against Amir Khan. This one should be fun. Terrence, thanks for the time, buddy. Best of luck to you.
Thank you.
Rafe, look, Bud has grown a lot in terms of being interviewed. He was really bad in the beginning of his career. He almost kind of took a step back in this one, though. And I think it's just because he doesn't want to go down the road of saying, yeah, F Errol Spence, I'll beat him right now. He's telling you sort of, yeah, I'll fight him when it makes sense, and I think it's a fight we can make. But right now, I'm focused on Amir Khan. And if you come at him with the Amir Khan said this about you, he said that about you, Bud will give you that. Well, we'll see on fight night. I mean, Bud's a gangster. There's a real backbone in there. I tried to tell him. I said, look, you know, Thurman, we love him, but I don't think he's the same man. Sean Porter, you saw him against Ugas, sort of circling away late. I don't think he's the same man as you. Rafe, when it comes to the real backbone, I think Spence and Bud Crawford have been taken from the 1980s and put in a time machine, and they're fighting today with that old style that no matter what it takes, I'm gonna beat you. I'm gonna do whatever it takes. Bud's just gangster like that. And it's really hard to bet against fighters like that. And that may not have been the most high-flying interview with Trash Talk, but he don't F around, Rafe. He cashes checks, he beats up guys who don't detail his car the right way, and he's gonna win in that ring.
I tend to agree. And that's one thing I really like about both Crawford and Spence is they have that soft-spoken, but don't ever miss you. But even as little as they say, as few words as they speak, as light as their tone can be, you would never at once in your mind think that this is a soft person or that this person is anything but a stone cold killer in a boxing ring. I mean, they have an aura about them that is like, they have a real hard edge that comes off even when they're mumbling and saying nothing. It's something about them. These
That's
guys
why you got to look at the entire man. You got to find out what, you know, what's in there. I mean, cause you know, look, there's no tug of war of kindness when you're going back and forth with a Bud Crawford.
It was like a tug and war of kindness. Every time I was kind, she would be more kind, then I'd be more kind, then she would be more kind.
Well, you know.
Folks, that's not the way men do it.
Whoa, come on. All right. That was Dwyer's voice, not mine. Bud's the real. He's the real, and we're going to find out on April 20th. Very much looking forward to this fight. I'll be there, ringside, the garden. You, Rafe? You, by any chance? You?
Afraid not, brother. That's the beginning of my sojourn, in Manila. So I'll be out of town for
Manila.
A couple of weeks, but I'll be happy to log in and discuss the fight with you. No problem.
Is this business or pleasure, Rafe?
A little bit of both. You know, I always have some meetings with people I know, but it's really just to get back, feel that extremely hot. I mean, it's the dead of summer in the Philippines, right now, and will be even more so when I arrive in mid-April. And yeah, you know, I don't feel right if I don't get back for, at least a couple of weeks each year.
All right. Are you pro boner?
I've always been pro boner.
All right. Just rolling on here. A weekend preview. Do you care time, Rafe? This could be an all-timer. I'm wondering if you're going to care at all. Are you ready? This is going to be quick. Are you ready for this, Rafe?
I'm going to do my best.
All right. Friday night, Las Vegas, Showbox. Angelo Leo versus Neil Tabano. 10 rounds, junior featherweights. Do you care?
Hell no.
All right. Friday night, ESPN Plus from the UAE, Rafe, United Arab Emirates, up in Dubai. Davey Olivier Joyce versus Stephen Tiffany. 10 rounds.
Who's feather. Promoting
Who
that?
Who the hell is promoting this?
Is that a Frank Warren thing? How does that end up on ESPN Plus? And they got that, but not the Kerman card. You guys, stop that crap. No, I don't care.
All right. I know that part of you cares about this. Saturday, Guatemala City, Guatemala. Lester Martinez versus Ricardo Mayorga. 6 rounds. And are you ready for this? Light heavyweights, Rafe. Mayorga's the former welterweight champion of the world. Light heavyweights. Do you care?
I care because it seems like a perfect setup for Maidana Mayorga in the very near future.
Oh my God. Wow, Rafe. Wow. I mean, like, I always care when Mayorga's fighting somewhere around the globe at like age 50 against somebody. It's going to be extra sloppy. It's going to be incredible. You know, I love me some Ricardo Mayorga, but light heavyweights in Guatemala, 6 rounds, Rafe. How did we get here?
Hashtag boxing, man.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Saturday in Hermosillo, Mexico, Rafe. Ramon Alvarez, older brother of Canelo, versus Jose Carlos Paz. 10 rounds, junior middleweights. Do you care?
I care. I love me some Ramon, not Canelo Alvarez.
Yes, yes. All right. Yeah. All right. That's that. Finally, Rafe, really, this is the whole weekend for you. Finally, Saturday, from Clackamas, Oregon. Shout out. I don't know if he'll be on this card.
I know where we're going.
But I think he has to be. The Beard, Patrick Connor of the podcast. What is it? It was called Top Men. What is it called these days?
I believe it's Knuckles and Gloves.
Knuckles and Gloves with our guy BJB, Bryn Jonathan Butler. I love me some Patrick Connor, the Beard. Stevie Forbes, 2 pound. Yes, the guy who fought Oscar, the contender guy. He's back, Rafe. What is he, like 40-something? He's going to be fighting Tavoris Teague, 7 rounds, junior middleweights. This is a card he promotes in Oregon. He's got a little thing going on there online. Patrick Connor calling the fights. Forbes Teague, do you care?
Oh, I care about so many of these people involved, but I won't be watching the fight, but I care.
All right, Rafe. What do you got going on this weekend? Because you're not going to be watching fights. I'll be in New York, Brooklyn, Jersey, WrestleMania. I'll be getting my wrestling on, Rafe. I'll be watching Japanese guys in Madison Square Garden. I'll be doing a lot of wrestling. Yourself, you got anything planned?
Well, it's the Final Four, the end of the NCAA tournament. I feel like that's a good way to spend a Saturday. Besides that, I got no effing clue, brother.
All right. You sound very disinterested about boxing, about life. I hope you're doing well, Rafe. All right? I hope.
You know, that's why I'm here, to spread the cheer and the joy.
All right.
It's not a rat race, guys. Every day is a gift.
Inside that big scrotum, is huge, huge testicles.
Thank you, T-Street. I F with T-Street.
He's got real big balls.
Yes, he does. He does, T-Street. I F with T-Street. I shout out to him on YouTube. I'm getting Rafe Bugs like. I'm going down the food chain. I'm listening to a lot of different people these days, you know?
There's a lot of gold out there. One thing, you know, it's a slow period in boxing, but when we look back at the last couple of weeks, all of the ridiculousness in boxing right now, it has been really, really paying off. The sport never finds a way to leave you bored, except sometimes when Tyson Fury and others like him are fighting. But you know, you're always going to have fighters kissing other fighters at weigh-ins, fighters doing all sorts of inappropriate things after fights, talking. You're going to have Ryan Garcia rapping, acting in terrible teen movies. There's always going to be something to laugh at. Thank you, boxing.
Shout out to our guest, Samir Khan. Shout out to Terrence Crawford. Revisit their collaboration on April 20th on ESPN pay-per-view. Shout out to our 2017 and 2018 fan of the year on the In This Combat podcast. What was the guy's name again?
You're talking about Alex Godinez?
Yeah, of course, Godinez. That's my guy. How dare I? Shout out to that guy. Shout out to the Irish crew. Rafe, shout out to you.
Thank you. Shout out to you.
No, thank you, but thank you very much.
Shout out to all your wrestling fans.
And shout out to Richard
Dwyer. I'm sure you listen to this.
Richard Dwyer's played a big role on the show today. Shout out to him, and then, you know, something to remember on the way out.
Let's talk math. Let's talk boxing. But first, remember, the opinion you should follow should be your own. Just consider this video to be a second opinion from a complete stranger online.
Yes, shout out to Evan Rakowski, who fuels the show. You got any other shout outs, Rafe?
I can't think of it. I mean, I don't know. Shout out to the I don't know, something. So shout out to everybody. Shout out to something. Bob Arum, hello, Grandpa.
All right, that's great. Okay, enjoy WrestleMania. We out.